Good evening, ladies and gentlemen, and welcome to our work session, June 8th, 2009. We appreciate everyone being here. And it's a special treat because we're going to get an update, and of course, most of you know already. But Bill, we're glad to have you and the committee, Bill Reynolds, our chairman of our Celebrate Aiken celebration, and all of you who have worked so hard so far. And believe me, I've been in on several of the meetings, of course, and I know how hard everyone is working. And I get all the emails as well. And so you're not the only ones that get all the email. But it's fantastic. And I really applaud you for doing what you're doing and for Bill's leadership. And also Richard Pierce, being our city contact, of course, and helping so much, and our city staff as well. And I'm sure Bill will say something about that, but Richard, we appreciate your efforts as well. So, Bill, without further ado, if you would like to take over, sir.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor, and good evening. It is it's a real privilege to come before you tonight and give you an update on this exciting 175th celebration of the founding of Aiken. This is very much a sneak preview. A lot of people working very hard since last February. We've got almost 100 people, outstanding group of folks. This event won't even be fielded until January 2010, and it'll be almost a year long. And what we wanted to do is to give you a quick overview of how we've done so far and then show you the presentation that we've been using with the sponsors. I am pleased to stand before you tonight to tell you that I am confident, and this group is confident, that we will more than double our original sponsorship goal, which was $25,000. And we will not need the city's $20,000 that you appropriated for this event. This will be a true community-funded event. No taxpayer money. Now, we may need to use it temporarily at the very outset when we're a little short on cash flow, but we're confident we'll be able to repay that. The other thing I want to tell you is that we've adopted a policy of buy Aiken first. We're going to buy everything possible here locally. We think that could be more than $60,000, even if it cost a little bit more than going outside of town. And the best news of all, for the men in the audience, there will be no beards grown this year. Like 25 years ago, they grew beards, and all the feedback we got was, let's don't do that again. So I just wanted to let you know, this will be a beardless celebration. Now, I would be remiss if I didn't at this time pause and recognize the folks that have worked so hard and accomplished these extraordinary results. And I'll show you the whole program here in a minute. But I want to recognize the chairs of each of the committees because they've been at it since early March. Tommy Culligan is here. She is the chair of the special events. Tommy, stand up if you would, please. She will be overseeing the big kickoff event and then the big birthday event in December. Katie Justin is here. Katie is the first quarter chair. Katie. Your own Kenny Cook and Kristen Brown are co-chairing the second quarter. And downtown Carla Cloud is here. She's chairing the third quarter. Chuck Leopold could not be here. He is out of the country, but Liz Stewart is sort of a co-chair of the fourth quarter, and she's also co-chair of the entire event. So she's been helping. Steve Hale is heading up the big publicity effort. And where's Steve? Over here. And finally, last but not least, Chris Vereens, our banker, is here. He's heading up revenue and finance, and I feel a whole lot better at night. Now, let me just give you an idea. I'm just going to take a couple of examples. I could go on for an hour, but we've been hot and heavy the last couple of weeks getting sponsorships lined up. And there are two people here that have been instrumental in the success story you see up here. The first one is KD Justin. KD has single-handedly accounted for about 25% of the sponsorship commitment dollars we have at this point. And Chris Vereens has accounted for more than 33% of the sponsorship commitment dollars. And those are just a few examples. I'd like to also recognize the steering committee, those of you that aren't chairs, that are on the steering committee, if you would just stand up and so people can see who you are, because you've certainly been putting in the hours. There's Colleen Reed and Mary Lou DeWar, June Murph, Beth Newburn, Cindy Delaney back there. These folks have been at it since February. And there are volunteers of the various subcommittees here tonight, and I'd also like for them to stand up. There's Eula Lieber, Walt Joseph, Sunil, Jane Davis, Henry Kepler. Believe me, you have no idea the number of hours these folks have been working to get us to where we are, which I'm going to show you here in just a moment. And finally, we couldn't have done this without Richard Pierce and the city staff. Every single thing that I've asked them to do, they have come through with flying colors. And Sarah is here, Sarah and Susan, and I'm not sure who else, if anybody else is here, but they have done an outstanding job. They've been there for us when we needed us. So what I'd like to do now is to show you the sponsor presentation that has been so successful, and it'll give you an idea of where we are as of June the 8th. The last three groups I've shown this to all applauded when I was through, and I thought, well, I must have made a great presentation. But I realized they were applauding the thoroughness of our planning, and they were applauding the celebration of the past, the present, and the future of this wonderful town of Aiken that we love so much. So that's what the applause was all about. So what we're here tonight to do is to bring you up to date on the celebration of Aiken, because we've got a lot to celebrate: a rich past, a vibrant present, and a bright future. Folks, I apologize. It worked fine in the rehearsal, and for some reason or other, it has decided to slip off to the right a little bit. But I think you'll be able to easily get the gist of this. We have a very rich past. It began with the railroads in 1833. The Winter Colony has certainly had an impact. The Emanuel School, for example, was built in 1869, 140 years ago, and it's being resurrected now as the African American Cultural Center, and will be there for the future. Our equestrian activities, our downtown is exemplified by the post office being built in 1910. And finally, the DuPonters from SRS and the enormous impact they've had on the past, and the positive impact they've had on the past of Aiken. The present is that we're all living in is extraordinary. Our bustling downtown, our caring community, as you can see, that's exemplified by our one table last Thanksgiving in the alley where over 2,000 people were fed. Our historic areas, our equestrian industry, and some of the unique things that make Aiken so special, Farmers Market and Hopeland's Gardens. But we also have a very bright future. Again, our downtown will lead our future, but so will our children, our youth, and our education. Green space will always be part of our future, and the city's strategic plan for the future will also figure greatly in as we go forward. And finally on the horizon is the hydrogen research, and we don't know where that's going to lead, but it's very exciting. So we've got a lot to celebrate. So let's do celebrate. Let's celebrate the past 175 years as well as our future. And this is our logo, Celebrate Aiken. And it was developed by graphics designer Cindy Pierce, who is wife of Richard. She developed this for us and has donated it, no charge. So we've got a very contemporary, upbeat logo for this event. Now, the event kicks off. We have this big kickoff party downtown. It's called Sights, Sounds, and Taste of 1835. It'll be downtown Saturday afternoon, next January the 9th. And there will be people dressed up in period costumes. We're going to have food such as was eaten back in 1835. We'll have music. We're going to have blacksmiths. And that's what Tommy and her group are off planning right now. It'll be free. There will be activities for all ages. We're going to have free Celebrate Aiken buttons. And these details are still being developed, as all of these details are. But that's going to kick it off. And then we move to a quarterly theme. The first quarter is called History, Horses, and Health. And this will give you an idea of some of the things that we're thinking about doing. A Racing Hall of Fame, very special event. We're going to have a historic horse trough dedication at Banksia, and this is an old cement water horse trough that was down at Coker Springs. It's been full of dirt for a long time, and that's going to be cleaned up, brought down to Banksia. They're going to run water to it, and it will be used for watering horses as they go in and out of the woods. And it also, as I understand it, will have a fountain for joggers and walkers going in and coming out of the woods. So that'll be a really neat event. We're also planning a high tea at either the Wilcox or Banksia. Then when we move to the second quarter, that quarter's theme is arts, entertainment, and education. And this will give you an idea of some of the things we're planning there. Jim Harrison has come forward and said, I would like to offer you an exhibit to help as a fundraiser, to help you pay for this event. And he is going to paint somewhere around 20 to 22 original scenes of Aiken. And these will be on display the first 5 weeks in this quarter. As you know, Jim is a very well-known, popular artist. We're also going to tie in with the grand opening of the Railroad Depot. We're going to have a historical Aiken Film Festival. And Sissy Brody, bless her heart, is going to resurrect the famous 1985 period picnic, and it's going to be at Rye Patch. So that is, stay tuned. That is going to be a lot of fun. When we move to the third quarter, that quarter's theme is business, innovation, and technology. And that certainly, Aiken's Making will be a big part of that. But we've also got some really neat things planned. There will be a business and technology expo out at USC Aiken in the convocation in July, and there will be some 40 companies out there that will have a booth, and they'll invite the public to come in and learn all about what they do, and we hope that this is going to truly be a signature event. We're going to have a transportation parade to the new railroad depot in September that will involve the community. And finally, we plan on tours of educational, technical, and business facilities in August and September, and hopefully something with SRS and the new hydrogen research facility. And that all of that is still, as you can see, that's well over a year off, but those are the things that we're working on. And then finally, in October, December, Aiken's future, we've shifted from the past to the future. And one of the things that we're planning on doing is having a children's essay in the school system. We'll ask them what Aiken will be like in 25 years, and we're going to put it in a time capsule. In 25 years from now, we'll open up the time capsule, and hopefully most of those children will still be in Aiken with their children, and they'll be able to read what they thought about the future of Aiken with their children. We also, separately, the city will be updating its strategic plan because it concludes in 2010, and the city will be off on a parallel path updating the strategic plan for the future, and then it will be shared with the public at the end of this quarter. And finally, the grand finale. A birthday party like you've never been to and Aiken's never seen. It's going to be a Celebrate Aiken birthday party Saturday, December 18th at the USCA Convocation Center. Public's invited, free admission, food, entertainment, and it's 18 months away, so obviously there are a few details that still need to be worked out. But we have the site reserved, and so the date is a firm thing, and it's confirmed the public's going to be invited, and it's going to be free, and it's going to be a lot of fun. Now, a couple of things that we're going to do that we think will really keep the community's interest. First of all, we're going to unveil this to the public October 3rd at the Washington Center for the Performing Arts. We'll have a slide presentation. We hope to show our TV commercials, and we will invite the public to participate in whatever role they would like. Either they could be a volunteer, and we'll have sign-up tables for them in the lobby. So the public will be shown this on a Saturday afternoon and invited to participate. Then we're also thinking, and this is, we'll have to come to you for approval, but the Aiken Women's Club ladies who were instrumental in developing the character banners are working with us to develop street banners that look something like this that would hang side by side next to the character banners. So it would create interest all year long, and when people come to town, they're going to say, what's this Celebrate Aiken all about? So that'll just keep the buzz going. We also are going to have a website. We'll have TV commercials and a lot of print coverage of the event. But here are a couple of things that we really are proud of. We have a couple of artists that have come to us months ago when we were really desperate for money to put this on, and they offered to do a fundraiser at no risk to us. Jenny Southworth, along with Cindy Pierce and Richard Pierce, came forth and said, we will do a coffee table book. It's going to have Celebrate Aiken on the dust cover, but it will have photographs of Aiken in 2009 on the verge of the 175th celebration. And we will receive $10 from every book that is sold. And then Jim Harrison has offered to do a limited edition poster, Celebrate Aiken limited edition poster, and it is a scene of a typical old Aiken cottage with a picket fence and a big old oak tree and flowers, and it'll look something like this, and we'll receive $9 from every one of those are sold, and we have no financial risk in either one of these projects. And of course, then we're going to have souvenirs, T-shirts, caps, mugs, and things of that nature. So it's a year-long celebration, and what we've told folks is if Aiken has been good to you, you can be good to Aiken by being a sponsor. And their response has been incredible, because all of the money that we generate from these sponsorships fund the events and the publicity. The first level of sponsorship is a Hitchcock Founders level, and we felt that was appropriate because Mr. and Mrs. Hitchcock founded Aiken Prep. They were instrumental in the founding of the Winter Colony, and they were instrumental in the founding of Hitchcock Woods. Now, that sponsorship is $7,500, and it sold out. The first five people we showed it to said, sign us up. Aiken Regional was one of them, URS, Savannah River Nuclear Solutions, the Chamber of Commerce, and the City of Aiken. The next level is the Schofield and Sally Pioneer level. And we call it the Pioneer level because Martha Schofield pioneered quality education for African Americans in Aiken. And Eulalie Sally, as you know, pioneered the women's right to vote. So we thought that that was an appropriate tie-in with our past, as well as two dynamic ladies from the past. These sponsorships were $4,500, and they sold out last week. Vista Bank has offered to be a sponsor, Savannah River Remediation, Bridgestone, the Aiken Border Realtors, and the Aiken Standard are the sponsors at this level. And I'd like to give them a round of applause. And I know some of of the folks are here from the Chamber and from the Board of Realtors, and I'm not sure if anybody is here from Vista Bank or Bridgestone, or the Aiken, and somebody is certainly here from the Aiken Standard, but we never thought we would get this far this fast. The last sponsorship level is the Dr. A.B. Miles Humanitarian Level. Dr. Miles was the only African-American doctor in Aiken during the 50s and 60s, and he delivered all of the African-American babies in Aiken, as we understand it, many at no charge. So we felt that this was only appropriate that we recognize him in this way. And this is $1,000, and I want you to look at the people that have already committed. It's an interesting cross-section. You've got a woman's civic club, you've got individuals, you've got a law firm, you've got the Aiken County Bar Association, and then you have the banks that are solidly behind this. Every bank in town, except for two, is up there, and only because I haven't been able to connect with the president of one, and the other one, the folks have been out of town. So the banking industry is solidly behind this. So that's just a summary. It's going to be a year-long celebration. It starts off with the unveiling in October, then the kickoff, and then the grand finale birthday party. So that's just a brief summary of where we are. A lot of work to be done. We're trying to get all of this wrapped up by June 30th, and then we'll be working over the summer, and then the fun will begin. So thank you for your support. Thank you for your time and attention, and if there are any questions, we'll try to answer them for you.
Are there any questions? Bill, again, thank you so much for what you're doing, your leadership, and everyone that's working here, the leadership, because we all know it takes all of us working together to do anything successful. And this is certainly on that path to being extremely successful. So thank you again. Comments, questions from anyone?
Excellent job.
Thank you. Bill. Thank these folks. And those that couldn't be here because they're tired.
Absolutely.
Thank you very much.
You're welcome. Thank you again.
Thank you.
You don't have to leave now. You can stay around for
another 4 hours.
the whole agenda that we're going to have, if you'd like.
Just saying, you're in good hands.
That's a hard sell. That's a hard
sell. Oh, okay. Okay. Good evening, ladies and gentlemen. Welcome to Aiken City Council meeting on June 8, 2009. We had a work session before, and it didn't last quite as long as we thought. That's why we had that time in between. And when we advertise for 7 o'clock, we don't like to start before 7, so that's why we had that delay. We thank you for being with us. And as we begin our council meeting, if you would stand with us for a prayer and pledge.
Dear Lord, we thank you that once again we can come into these chambers and discuss the city's business, the citizens' business. We thank you for your guidance to us. We ask for more and also wisdom as we go through our agenda to do the things that we know are the best for our citizens. And trying to improve the quality of life as best we can on each item. We thank you for our citizens that do help us, that participate with us, as exhibited in the previous meeting with the folks that are working on our celebration, 175th celebration. That's just a sign of how we can work together, and when we do, we can be successful. So again, we thank you for being with us this evening, and we thank you, Lord, for guiding us and giving us the wisdom that we need, and we give you the honor and the glory. In Jesus' name we pray. Amen.
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Thank you. Do we have any additions or deletions from our agenda this evening?
Mr. Mayor, if I could, I'd like to possibly consider two items. One was just to mention to you in a public forum the letter that we received from Neil Farfour concerning the property, so there's some closure, and if there's any questions, we can talk about it. Two, I thought that Steve Mueller might be here. He had a request concerning some items with his bread and breakfast. If he's here, we could certainly talk about it. If he's not here, we don't have to talk about it. Or council may want to talk about what I've received from him in email.
Okay. How about those items being number 4 and 5 then under petitions and requests? Is that okay? Okay. Anything else?
I'd like to discuss the process of appointing to the Aiken Housing Authority, as I've mentioned to several council members, whether that should occur before the appointments to the boards and commissions, which is our first item under old business, or not. I'll leave it to you, Mr. Mayor.
Okay. Why don't we just have that number 6,
okay.
Dick, since appointment to boards is pretty clear-cut. We have one, I think. How does council? You want to talk about that when we get to appointments? Doesn't really matter.
Well, it relates to the particular appointment in question. So
all right, let's talk about it when we get to the appointments.
Okay.
Let's talk about it then. Okay. That's good. Okay. Anything else? If not, show of hands, please. All in favor of amended agenda. Okay. Passes unanimously. Next item, the minutes. Consideration of the minutes of the regular meeting, May 11th, 2009. Any discussion? If not, do we have a motion and second?
So moved, Mr. Mayor.
Second, Mr. Mayor.
Okay. All in favor? Approval? Passes unanimously. Under old business, appointments to boards and commissions. Mr. LeDuc, please.
Yes, sir. We have one appointment for your consideration tonight, and that's Councilmember Smith has recommended the reappointment of Catherine Thomas to the Arts Commission.
Okay. Do we have a motion for that?
Mr. Mayor, I move that we move ahead with the reappointment of Catherine Thomas.
Second, Mr. Mayor.
Okay, and that's the second. Any discussion? If not, show hands, please. All in favor? Passes unanimously. Item 2.
Mr. Mayor?
Sure.
Do you want that time?
Yes.
Time.
I'm sorry.
Okay.
Go ahead, Dick.
I didn't realize that was the Housing Authority appointment was not going to be made. It doesn't bother me to go number 6 or now, whichever. Prefer.
Let's go ahead now.
Okay. I just wanted to raise the issue, and we had talked about it once before, the fact that the Aiken Housing Authority has only 5 appointments, and there are 2 council members that do not have appointments. And I don't recall where we left it. I know we talked about trying to get 2 additional appointments so that everybody could have one. And I'll defer now to Councilwoman Price, who I think was going to move in that direction.
Yes, I contacted both Ivory Matthews and Reggie Bonner to ask the question this weekend. Wasn't able to get in contact with either one of them in terms of the question regarding 5 versus 7 appointees. And speaking with Councilman Dewar this past week, we discussed the current appointment, James Gallman, of whom I had contacted already and was going to make the request to reseat him again in the Housing Authority. The comment came up about 5 versus 7 appointees and some way of working with that, but I had already contacted Mr. Gallman, so.
Let me ask, is there any legal reason why there were only 5 to start with? Does anybody know? If not, why don't we have 7?
There are 6 currently. One of them is appointed by them because it has to be someone in using the housing that they have. In other words, it has to be a resident member. I'm going to be meeting with Ivory and Reggie later this week a couple of different times, and I will certainly talk to them at that time. What council may want to look at, though, is one of two alternatives. One would be they could increase the board size, and that might be something they could do very easily, or maybe there's some legal issues that are involved with it that they could answer. The other one would be if they remain at five, does council want to rotate the appointments in some fashion? And we could come up with that if council so desires once I find out this other issue.
Okay. Is that okay?
Yeah, that sounds fine.
Okay. So I will bring something back to City Council at the next meeting, one way or the other. If for some reason they cannot increase it, then we'll look at possibly some rotation.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Yeah.
One of the things that I shared and I ended up working with this weekend, some of the folks that live in the district, although the comment that Dick made was that when you serve at large, you represent the entire city. I think most of us, or all of us, get calls from throughout the city, but the base of which the folks live in District 2 and Councilwoman Clyburn's district. And so considering those factors in terms of the access, the phone calls that we get, these are folks that are actually living not very far with whomever represents those districts. Granted, if you're living on the south side, it may not matter in terms of handling problems, but I do know that when it comes to the housing authority and those concerns, there's a lot of requests. So just wanted to share that piece of information.
Well, however it works out, I would not be opposed of letting you know my appointee be rotating. That wouldn't bother me at all. I'm sure we can work something out. So.
And as council probably realizes, Aiken Housing Authority is not just serving housing in the city of Aiken.
No, it's not.
Probably more than 50% of their housing is outside the city of Aiken. It just so happened that the charter came under the city, and at some point in time, then they started developing additional housing in areas much further out in the city, into the valley, and now even into the North Augusta area. So it does, but they're under our charter, they're under the city of Aiken banner, and that's why you have been making the appointments all these decades.
Okay, good. Well, we've got a plan there to move forward on that in some fashion anyway. Item two is a second reading and public hearing of an ordinance setting the millage rate for fiscal year 2009 and 2010. Mr. LeDuc, please.
Yes, sir. I'm going to read this by title only. It's an ordinance to provide for the levy of taxes for ordinary city purposes and for capital development purposes in the city of Aiken for the fiscal year beginning 2009, July 1st, to set the millage rate thereof at 66 mils and provide for the expenditures thereof. For the last over 20 years now, we have not raised the taxes. You know, and we could philosophically, I believe that's a very good thing. And in fact, on five separate occasions, we actually lowered the taxes in our city. The millage rate at one point was at 120 mils. We're down to 66 mils. You recently lowered it just a year and a half or so ago. It brings in around 30% of our funds come through taxes. Now, taxes are not just property taxes, but they're vehicle taxes. It's general merchandise taxes. It covers a number of different areas. But it's at 66 mils. We're happy and very pleased that through your leadership, your assistance, all the department heads that are out there, that we've been able to control the taxes and to keep them at the level that we are today. And so we thank you for working with us and to exhibiting the careful stewardship that you have on these funds. So for your consideration tonight, this is approval of the and second reading and public hearing of an ordinance setting the millage for the year 2009-2010 at 66 mils.
Thank you, sir. This is a second reading public hearing, so if there's anyone in the audience who would like to speak on this issue, you certainly may do so. If not, it's back to City Council for consideration.
Mr. Mayor, I'd like to move for approval of this ordinance on second reading.
Okay.
Second.
We have a second. Any discussion? If not, show of hands, please. All in favor? passes unanimously. I think we all certainly appreciate the work that our staff is doing, city manager on down, finance department on keeping the books and keeping us all straight, and doing a super job with the finances. Appreciate that very much. Item 3, second reading, public hearing of an ordinance approving a budget for fiscal year 2009-2010. Mr. LaDuke, please.
Yes, sir. Again, I'll read this by title. It's an ordinance adopting a budget proposed by the city manager containing estimates of proposed revenue expenditures by the city of Aiken for the fiscal year beginning July 1, 2009, and ending June 30, 2010, and declaring that the same shall constitute the budget of the city of Aiken. This is the total budget. It was not an easy year. We, like so many others, have felt the loss in revenue, and yet there's been many areas where the expenditures have been rising. Some of the areas that we've talked about in the past that we see our revenues actually lower, and this could change next year, but right at the point in time, our building permits are down about 55%, state revenues down about 27%, fines and forfeitures are down, interest rates, which is the big one, is down 73%. Vehicle taxes are down 11%. People are not buying new cars. Business license is down. So we have actually taken our budget from last year and we shrunk it by about $1.8 million. We've done that by a number of things, of freezing positions, cutting out a lot of the travel that we've had, not expending certain capital items, purchasing them in our next year's budget, and taking from our reserves, which is one of the areas where we've talked about an awful lot with the audits and with each of you, that over the last 5 years especially, we have been increasing our reserves, not anticipating this would come, but also being very cautious and knowing that this type of time could come. So we have looked at a combination of none of these, but at the same time, we've tried to continue serving those areas that you asked us to continue in the past. The library, ADDA, Council on Aging, the Economic Development Partnership, Children's Advocacy Center, Cumbie Center, things of that nature. We also have in there a number of planning studies, knowing that our future is by really doing the appropriate planning, especially on roads. South Carolina 19, we're analyzing. Doherty Road, we're making an analyzation. We're looking at the entire north side and what interconnecting roads do we need and what do we need to do with some of the existing roads. Doing a traffic modeling so that we get a more accurate picture in determining what the future growth will be for new divisions that may come in or new stores. We feel the model that we use, which is based on what they call it a GDOT model, Georgia Department of Transportation. Why we're using their model here in Aiken is only because we're part of the ARTS, the Augusta Regional Transportation System. So we have formed up with the county and the city of North Augusta, and we're going to come up with our own model. The only area, and I hate to even bring this up to your attention, that I caution you is that we are falling short on our budget for utilities. Right now it appears that the summer may be wetter than normal, or at least normal, as far as rainfall is concerned. And with that, we will probably not bring as much revenue as we have in the past. We're already not meeting our budget for this year in our utilities. We're again using our reserves to get us by. However, although I really feel we need to have an increase, I also know the concerns that our citizens have and what they're going through. And for that, I'm saying work with me and our staff, and we will go and report back to you late summer, early fall, and let you know how the revenues are coming in. And at that time, this fall, maybe winter, we may have to make a budget adjustment. But I'm hoping and optimistic that we won't have to. So again, that's the only area that I do want to caution you on. You do have a second memo that if you had flipped through here, you probably would even have missed it. An incident occurred a couple of weeks ago, and Larry Morris and myself, there he is, talked about it. we had a situation where somebody had there was a minor water leak, but minor water leaks are nuisance to our customers when they have them. It's kind of like you had it in your yard, you wouldn't want to see water running down the street, and we're saying we're trying to conserve and we've got water problems. They went on vacation, thinking when they came back a week later the water leak would be fixed. It wasn't, because we had some bigger water leaks to take care of. And Larry and I talked about it, and this is becoming more common, that it's taking a week, sometimes even longer than that, to get a water leak fixed. Part of that is just that we have not been, the number of people we have working in our utilities division is the same as what we had 20 years ago. We just have not been increasing staff. We've been trying to work and find ways of maximizing the individuals we have. When I came to the city of Aiken, we typically, our crew consists of four individuals. And you'd have a foreman type person who would just most times stand around, another person that would kind of help out maybe with the equipment, and a couple of people on shovels. And we said most leaks could be handled by two individuals. So we have a lot of smaller crews, and we've been able to maximize our effort. Our overtime costs so far this year and what we had last year, we had $183,000 in overtime for water and sewer. That means we'll get calls late at night saying we want to turn the water on that's been cut off for whatever reason. We make accommodations for that. If there's sewer backups, of course, we make, you know, get our crews out there, water leaks, and other problems. We talked about it and feel that if we could hire a couple more people, we believe that we could reduce our overtime by, one, we're now going ahead and working 10-hour days. And we are shifting our crews. Some are working Monday through Thursday, some Tuesday through Friday. And we're looking in the future even implementing a two-man crew on Saturday. Anything we can do to try to cut down that overtime. Typically, I'd wait until the budget was over, but because of the concerns we have, I would like to modify the budget you have. And if you approve it tonight, all you'd have to do is to say, you know, we're approving the budget on second reading with a modification. And I'm asking that we modify it by adding two more individuals in our utility division. In return, we're going to lower our overtime. And so we're not increasing the amount of money in that budget. We're just substituting two individuals and to reduce our overtime. We're trying to get from that $180,000 down to $110,000, $120,000. And so that's the goal that we have. So tonight before you is a great budget. We feel the fact that we were able to balance it without going through a lot of hardship. Staff, all the employees have really worked hard to come to this point. We have individually met with all the employees in various meetings and gone over the budget, gone over their benefits, what they saw, ways we can improve and make some changes. And we've implemented several of these in the budget. And so it's a budget that's been worked on by many, many, many individuals. And it's basically that back row folks back there that get all the credit for the budget we have this year. And so I really like to applaud them and thank them publicly for all their hard work. And so what I'd like to do is present to you tonight, this is the second reading and public hearing of a budget. Let me get to this, make sure I say this correctly. Second reading and public hearing of an ordinance to approve the budget for the City of Aiken for fiscal year 2009-2010, and we'd like you to consider the option of adding those two new individuals to your utility budget.
Okay. Thank you, Roger. This is second reading public hearing, of course, of this, and if there's anyone in the audience who would like to speak on the budget ordinance, you may do so.
Jane Page Thompson, 240 Knox Avenue. Thank you for doing such a very good job of managing our city. Recently, in the last 6 months, I've had an experience that has taught me, as a taxpayer and as a voter, it really means very little. And there's one organization that you all support on your budget under your fees, dues, and memberships item in the budget. Through different fees and dues through different departments, it ranges anywhere from $8,900 for the city council dues to $11,000 in the new budget for memberships to the municipal association organization. Some of the other fees and dues I extrapolated from their website and your budget breakdown. That's around $28,000 to $45,000 from our budget going to that organization. I wanted to know, since there are several other venues, one being the COG, the Lower Savannah Council of Governments, that provides very similar services to the city according to their website now, whether they do it in actuality is a different thing, that the Municipal Association is providing. So I was wondering why there might be that redundancy in what Aiken County is paying to a for-profit, basically, organization, and what they pay to the General Assembly mandated COG that's supposed to sort of do the same thing. That was a question I have. The real reason I'm asking this question is because the Municipal Association has one of the strongest lobbies in Columbia, and they set about lobbying against several issues that are very integral to economic development for Aiken. And that organization specifically lobbied against an initiative that would have brought 400 jobs, 125 new house sales, and millions of dollars of tax revenue to the city. I just wanted to know why there is that line item, why we're spending anywhere from $8,000 to $45,000 with an association that sort of seems to be in direct conflict with the individual taxpayer's benefit.
Roger, do you want to take that?
I assume you're talking about the lobbying where they were trying to keep in its present form the way that homes are being evaluated?
Well, there were three or four different issues. There was also a property tax reform on aircraft. Well, I know that the city of Aiken owns part of our airport. The airplanes out there no longer get charged property tax. I mean, that's a pretty good size. You know, if you can afford a plane, I think you can afford a property tax. So, I mean, not only was it point of sale, but there was a property tax addendum for aircraft, a couple of other property tax addendums for luxury items like boats and a couple of other things, too.
What the Municipal Association, and they meet with cities across the state, and the mayor and Constable and Price have both been presidents of that association in the past. They could speak on this better than I can, but they meet many, many months ahead of time with the various cities across the state to determine the issues that they should adopt and support. It's not this association that's telling the cities what to do. It's cities telling them what they want to see done and how to protect the cities in the future. So they're really at the bidding of the cities, and the cities are telling them what to do. We support them $8,500 in dues every year. The rest of it that you're talking about, I don't know where you're getting these numbers from, but they collect the money for us on various areas, insurance and telephone, and it's something that we did for years. We had several individuals working on it, and it's saving us a tremendous amount of money, but it's also bringing us in more revenue in the fact that they know of phone companies and insurance companies nationwide that they're able to draw funding from and get us more revenue, and so they've been a tremendous help in those areas. They also put on a lot of educational programs for us, helps with the staff-wise, again, and providing services to us. So I can only speak as a city manager, but they have given us a tremendous amount of support throughout the years. You know, I'm sorry they may disagree with the issue that you're concerned about, but I know as a city manager, that the major thing that we have asked legislators, and the Municipal Association has also been very supportive of this, is we need to have overall tax restructuring in our state. And we wouldn't be in the issues that we are dealing with today with our schools and the fact that, because they put a 15% cap on all the properties, that artificially stopped a lot of the growth that we would have, and now it's hitting those properties of one time only that are being sold. But to drop that all without dropping the rest and refiguring it all out, it needs to have restructuring across the board. And that's why we have been looking at that and trying to support it. But
yeah, I certainly will say, and Leslie will speak up too if she wants. We get more money back, I'm convinced of this, without having figures in front of me, every year because of the work that the Municipal Association does for us in collecting some of the taxes that Roger has said, than we pay out. And you'd have to sit down, Jane Page, really, and talk about this thing at, you know, for some time and to go through. It'd be great if you are that interested to go up there someday and sit down with Miriam Hare, the executive director, and some of those folks and talk to them about what all they do. It's a wonderful organization. They do lobby for the cities, and that's a good thing, too, because they're looking for things that will help the cities save taxes where they can and do those things and help our citizens. And as far as the COG is concerned, they work hand in glove with the COG. Many of the training programs and things that the COG puts on are actually coming from the Municipal Association to the COGs all over the state. And if Bill Huggins were here, I don't know if Bill is still... Yeah, Bill works for the Municipal Association now. He's one of those who covers a large area of the state and visits all the cities within a certain area of the state. And he has firsthand knowledge now of what they do. But, you know, we could sit down with you and go over some of this stuff with you. As far as the issues, as Roger has said, the point of sale or whatever, that's... I mean... Sometimes there are those issues that are good maybe for the cities, but maybe not good for the real estate and selling houses.
Or not good for the individual taxpayer versus...
And so that's an individual kind of thing that, you know, you just have to understand and sit down and resolve how you feel about it. And then you lobby for your cause, whatever it may be. And, of course, that issue has not been resolved yet. There's more talking, and it'll go on until the next session starts
again. And there's a bill before the Senate to eliminate all taxpayer funds to organizations that do provide lobbying for governments. So if that bill does pass in January, February, or May of next year, then that may mean that your association is in jeopardy at that point, too.
Well, it may be, and that would be a sad time for the cities of the state of South Carolina.
Would the realtors support that bill?
I
can't speak for the Association of Realtors. As an individual, I don't believe it is fair for, and I know I'm not supposed to live in a world of fair, but as a taxpayer and as a voter, I pay taxes. I elect you all to represent me as the voter, as the taxpayer. Mm-hmm. I recognize that you all are voters and taxpayers as well. But when a handful of people, if we think about the governments, the Aiken City Council, Aiken County Council, and then our elected officials in Columbia, when 23 people's voices are louder than 500, 1,000, or 57,000 because they have a good lobbyist, I have a real problem with my taxpayers' dollars going to fund that lobbyist.
But it's not 23 people, Jane Page.
No.
The Municipal Association represents
city, towns, and cities
is who they represent, Jane.
Actually, it's about 270 municipalities that they represent throughout the state of South Carolina. One of the things that they do amongst many of these small towns do not have city managers, as we are so blessed to have. So they offer services to the small town with a rotating city manager. Some can afford to pay and share that cost. Some cannot. They offer those services to small cities to assist those cities. I also serve on the Lawrence Van Account, the COG board, and there are some things that the COG expands on that you would not find the municipal government expanding on or following through, because each one has their scope of jurisdiction or... I don't want to say control, but scope of focus in mind in terms of what they're focusing on with municipalities. You have the COG, who focus on senior citizen programs, funding water and sewer, those kinds of things, and economic development. But meanwhile, you have the Municipal Association that focuses on those things as well, but assisting those folks and funneling information to those folks as to where to go to get these resources to support, especially the rural towns, broadband, the association is focusing on those areas, but you also have the COG that's focusing on those things. They may overlap, but when you look at small towns, they're looking for all the help and resources they can get. I don't know much about the 400 jobs, but I'd like to look into that. And we've got our former assistant city manager out there, but I'll talk with Miriam as well, and I'd like to talk with you about that further.
Yeah, it was. I think that seeing when I have looked at what the mandate for the municipal association, the mandated association of South Carolina counties. There are voluntary organizations that you all, as our elected officials, elect to participate in, whereas the General Assembly in Columbia mandated that you have to be a member of the COG. And the COG, having talked to that director, mm-hmm. the only area in which they can't really provide as much of the representation that the municipal association currently provides happens to be in that area of education and recertification. And as far as the legal services, cities like Aiken usually have their own legal staff on hand. And as far as the insurance goes, I know our Department of Insurance at the state level is looking to provide more municipal programs so that there isn't this second step. I mean, if we're looking at trying to streamline government and not duplicate expenditure, it seems to me that the General Assembly has put the authority in the COG to provide the same things that the Municipal Association and the South Carolina Association of Counties is providing to the city, and that maybe that duplication of effort isn't necessary. But maybe this is not this year's budget issue, but as budgets get tighter for next year and capital expenditures might have to get cut even further, this might be a duplication in effort that you might want to find that $100,000 or so to fund your two workers in the water department, since I have been a benefit of them on a Sunday afternoon. So I see where you're going, but I was looking at trying to get you those jobs back and that mm-hmm. money back in your budget, because you are duplicate spending. I mean, as far as from me looking at it as a taxpayer, and then going to the website, getting the information that all those organizations have about what their mandates are, we have one the General Assembly requires you to participate in, and one you all voluntarily give money to, that both of them are supposed to be doing the same thing. That's all.
Let me mention one other thing, too. In terms of training, the COG provides local training. At one time, I think, Sarah, you had to go to Columbia to get a lot of that training, but they have brought it, they've localized it, placing it in close proximity, where the distance is not a factor with folks getting training depending on where their job scope is.
Jane, one thing, just in the past 3.5 years, having been a member of the South Carolina, the Municipal Association of South Carolina, they are a huge proponent of hometown rule. And you and I both know that we want that. We could let everything be mandated out of the state house. No, we don't want that. They keep us informed, and they make sure that the folks that are down here, sitting down here making the regulations, are in direct connection with you, so that we can listen to you. And we do want to keep that. And without the Municipal Association, I have no other contact to find out what's actually going on in Columbia. It's through them that they keep us alerted. And, you know, I know we've got some great legislators up there, and we've got some that ought not to be up there. And, you know, when they're trying to pass some legislation that's going to take the regulation of our cities out of our hands, then we have to fight that. And this is, I mean, they're a staunch supporter of keeping hometown rule.
Thank you.
Thank you, Jane Page. Anyone else would like to speak on the budget? If not, it's back to City Council for consideration.
Mr. Mayor, I wanted to ask Roger a question about the hiring of the two employees. That includes benefits?
Yes.
Okay. And you can do that for that amount of money?
And we start off most of those employees at 9-something an hour. Mm-hmm. At the end of 6 months, they're making 10-something an hour, which is $20,000 for each one that you add in the various benefits and uniforms. We'll have to probably get a vehicle. And so we feel for $55,000 we could do that.
Mm-hmm. I just think it's I think it's brilliant, because not only are you putting two people to work, but you're doing it where it doesn't cost us anything extra.
And again, what we could look at is, in 6 months, if we find out that we're not seeing our overtime reduced, we could always come back and eliminate that. We really feel that implementing the 4 10-hour days, going to some Saturday work, adding these extra couple of people, we'll see some reduction in overtime. So that's our goal. That's our hope. But more importantly, it's the thing that probably drives us, in my mind anyways, is I hate to see people calling Larry Morris, calling me, calling the mayor, calling you all, and then saying, you know, I've had this leak out here, I've had this sluggish sewer, and no one's giving me good service. And good service is what we're all about. And so it's yes, we'd like to reduce the overtime, but it's more importantly that we give good service to our customers.
Mr. Mayor, the assumption that I made, Roger, with this request for the two employees, given you're looking at the overtime hours and when these hours required services, it was outside of the box of the normal working hour, and this is the period that we need these two individuals. Am I right to assume?
Yeah, we're you know, our plan is by adding 80 more hours of work during the week, we could fix several more leaks or get to several more backups and other things without having to work the overtime then on Saturday and Sunday.
Mr. Mayor.
Okay.
I move that we approve the budget for the City of Aiken for the fiscal year 2009-2010.
With the addition of?
The two.
Estimate.
I'm sorry.
Yeah.
The two employees, yes.
Thank you.
At a cost, total cost of $55,000 to the line item for salary and wages.
I'd like to second that, Mr. Mayor.
Okay, we have a second. Any other discussion?
Yeah, I would just want to say that going through this budget on a page-by-page basis, there's a lot of items that have we're spending less, a couple that we're spending more. I'm really worried about what we're going to do next year, because next year is going to be much tougher than this is, and I know this was a difficult one for Roger, and I'm not sure there's a lot of meat left on that bone to scrape off for next year. So I think we should be concerned about what's going to happen in the future, but I'll support the budget. It's a great job.
Absolutely. Okay, any other discussion? If not, show hands, please. All in favor? Approval? Passes unanimously.
If I could just respond to that comment.
Sure.
The two major areas that we are hurting within this recessional period is we've been under 0.6%, or under 1% in interest rates, where just a few years ago we were at 4% and 5%, and we're getting, I mean, we got, as I said, the nice thing about the reserves is during times like now we have them to use, but also during those good years we got a lot of money in interest. So if the interest rates, which they're talking about, they're going to climb, they can't get any lower. I shouldn't say that, because twice I told that to Kim, and twice they went down to 0.757%. But you know, so we expect more money coming in that area. But also, we're already starting to see more building permits being issued and more construction. And so we would anticipate, not immediately, but again, when we start looking at next year's budget or the year after, that'll start in 2010. And we would hope the economy to pick up the stimulus money that's going to be here in Aiken, the 1 point, is it 6 or 8? I keep hearing different numbers.
6.15.
1.6.
1.6, 1.9.
Well, I'm talking about the site.
I'm talking about the site, too.
Okay. Is it 1.6? I'm sorry, I was wrong.
The $1.6 billion that will be coming into our local economy over the next couple of years should also add a major boost. So I'm optimistic, but I'm also cautious.
Okay.
Yeah. And I do want to reiterate something I've said many times. I think we've done this in not increasing the fees when we could have this year. But you know, when we have lower business license, excise tax income, and other things, it really we've got businesses that need help if the income is lower. They're making less. And so I think it's a good thing to try to keep fees down, because that affects your bottom line in business as much as anything. And we talked about this and the fact that it was kind of pointless to lower the business license excise tax rate and raise fees. I mean, why? That would just be ridiculous, you know. So we didn't do that. And so I think that though the fees sound low, I know that's one reason we've all thought about very carefully before raising them, because everybody's earning less interest, and everybody doesn't have a reserve fund either.
That's right, Jane. That's right. Okay, under new business, first item is an ordinance to annex property on University Parkway near Arbor Court. Mr. LeDuc, please.
Yes, sir. This is an ordinance to annex the corporate limits of the City of Aiken, certain property consisting of 5 acres of land, more or less, owned by North Point Development Group, LLC, and to zone the same planned commercial. This property is on the bypass, on the northwest part of the bypass. It would be hard to pinpoint, other than, as we say, it's opposite Arbor Court. The gentleman owns 51.4 acres. To fall into the PC category, though, he is looking at 5 acres that he has given us a development plan for it, basically consisting of a cosmetology school at that location. The Planning Commission approved this annexation on a 4-2 vote. They had several conditions. I'll read those: that the elevation for the office building in Phase 2 be approved by the Planning Director, that a plat corresponding to the proposed 5-acre parcel boundaries be recorded at the RMC office and submitted to the city, that the annexation be contingent upon the sale of the property to the contract purchaser, that the developer comply with the planning commercial provisions in 4.38 of the zoning ordinance, that as part of Phase 1 site/landscaping approval, the Phase 2 sanitary sewer easement through Phase 1 be recorded, that only one freestanding sign is permitted for the entire planned commercial project, which must be on site, that the developer should install or post money for the eastbound as well as the westbound turn lane, that the applicant and contract purchasers sign an agreement with the city listing any conditions, and that agreement be recorded at the RMC office, and that all conditions be met within 180 days. So for your consideration tonight, this is the first reading of an ordinance to annex 5 acres of property off the University Parkway near Arbor Court as planned commercial.
Okay, thank you, sir. Is anyone in the audience that represents this particular item on the agenda? Would you like to say anything about it? You may do so, and anyone else that wants to speak on the subject can do that as well.
Good evening.
Good evening.
Clay Bolton. I'm Ronnie Bolton's son. I think you guys know me. There's just one clarification item I have. If you look at item 7, there should be a few more words in that sentence. The developer should install or post money for the eastbound as well as the westbound turn lane prior to any building permits being issued for Phase 2. That's omitted on 7. If you look at the ordinance itself on 7, it reads that.
Mm-hmm. And that is prior to Phase 2.
Yeah, Phase 2.
Prior to building.
Right, the ordinance is wrong.
Yeah.
Yes,
okay.
Correct.
Okay.
That's all.
Okay.
I have a question.
Sure.
Is this the cosmetology school that's moving from the south side, or is this another?
I just represent North Point LLC. We're the property owners, but the developer himself, I don't think, could be here tonight.
Okay.
But yes.
Okay.
I was just curious, Clay, maybe you know, maybe you don't. The statement here about Phase 2?
Yes.
May not be developed?
Correct.
Anything to...
At this point, he is going forward with the cosmetology school, but not certain based on the economy on Phase 2.
Sure, okay.
And in planning and zoning, he made that pretty clear.
Yeah, yep. Okay, for economic reasons, probably.
Okay.
Yep. All right, any questions of Clay while he's standing? Okay. Well, thank you so much. Okay, anyone else want to speak on the issue? Okay, if not, it's back to City Council. Do we have a motion? A second?
Can I just make a comment?
Oh, certainly.
I don't mean to be critical, but there's a significant item that I don't think was in the city manager memo. This passed on a 4-2 vote. Two most experienced planners, members of the Planning Commission, voted against it because it wouldn't comply with the proposed corridor overlay district. That statement is only in the minutes that were attached to our package, and you had to read those to know that this doesn't comply with the proposed corridor overlay district. I'd like to know why it doesn't comply, but I think that's something that should have been in the package that we reviewed. It's Commissioners Burden and Joby voted against it just for that reason. I spoke to one of them.
Okay.
Why does it not comply?
Ed, could you give us any update on that or any thoughts on that? Why it doesn't comply and that kind of.
I think the reason it wouldn't comply is that the proposed overlay would limit the amount of paving between the street right-of-way and any building. And, excuse me, my throat is closing up. You could have 100 feet between the front property line and the building. And the office buildings might meet that. The cosmetology school does not.
So the cosmetology building is okay, but to no, propose no. other... No,
no, it's the other way around.
The other way around.
Correct. The okay. cosmetology school would be too far away from the front property line.
Now why is that? Why does it have to be that way, according to...
Well, again, this is just the proposed highway overlay guidelines, which have not been adopted, have not been approved by the Planning Commission.
Okay. Okay.
We're probably 4 or 5 months away from that coming before council. Excuse me.
Am I wrong in thinking that this was sometimes, I think, in areas I've heard that they have this sort of a provision so that they don't have offices always have parking lots on the front of properties, that's not all you see on the very front of a property? I know in Charlottesville, Virginia, they had built the buildings up to the road and put the parking behind it, thinking that's more aesthetically correct. I don't know if I agree with that in all cases, and I don't know if that's what the Planning Commission's even going to adopt. But I think am I wrong if that's not part of the thinking?
That's the intent, to minimize the amount of paving that you see from the street.
And a good example of that would be, think of Whiskey Road and think of the Walmart that's there, and you have several hundred feet of asphalt between the right-of-way and the building. We then went back and said that on the Whiskey Road corridor, we wanted to see buildings to have no more than two parking rows before your building. A good example of what we'd like to see is the mall area. All the out parcels have parking behind them or alongside of them, and they have very limited parking in front of those buildings. So you think of Outback, you think of IHOP and all those that came in after we passed this the change. And so that's what we're asking for, so we don't get a sea of asphalt in front of these types of buildings. Whether that's appropriate in all areas, and again, the reason this wasn't put in the memo, because this has not been passed. It was their opinion, and 4 or 5 months later we adopted this as a policy, then that would be part of the comprehensive plan as to where and what we want to have in those areas. But we're so many months away that...
The whole idea is being discussed by the Design Review Board and by the Planning Commission. And we're going through an informal comment period now, trying to get comments from the public. The Chamber is helping us with that. We set a deadline for June 19th for getting those informal comments, which will go back to the Design Review Board and the Planning Commission. They will come up with their final version, which will eventually end up with you. But, again, that's months away.
Okay, thank you.
But now we are talking about, I mean, this parking lot would have to be landscaped. It would have to have the medians. And
But, again, as a planned commercial, council has control over whatever features you would like to see of the building, the parking lot, etc.
And there's no provision in here. I mean, he's not planning to ask. He won't be putting asphalt down on the whole front of the property between the roadway and the building, will he? Because I think he's hoping to have other structures, right?
Well, the dark spot on your site plan back in the corner is the cosmetology school.
Uh-huh. And the only parking lot that's approved is what's shown on this map?
Correct. Well, he's requesting approval, and Clay can correct me if I'm wrong, but I mean, my understanding is they are requesting approval for not just the cosmetology school, but also the two office buildings that would come later. On your site plan, they don't show up very well, but they are there on the actual plan that's been submitted.
So it would not come back to City Council then when these other buildings are built?
Correct.
Yeah, that's correct. That's the concept, right?
Unless they made some change to the plan.
But this would be like us approving that University Hospital thing when just one building was going to be built, wouldn't it?
No. I mean, in that case, what university came back to you with was just the one office building.
Correct.
In this case, they're asking for approval of, my understanding again, approval of the cosmetology school in the back. Thank you. And the two office buildings toward the front, closer to 118, which don't show up very well on your site plan. They're asking for approval for the whole thing.
So could we legally approve this with the stipulation that future buildings comply with the overlay district if it's passed?
I think you can. I think Gary would agree with that.
And also in condition number one, it says the elevation of the office building phase two is approved by the planning director. And, I mean, you can even put the words in there. In compliance with the future, what do you call those? They're not guidelines, standards?
Design guidelines.
Design guidelines, the architect guidelines.
Mm-hmm. And I've got a question. In looking at the drawing here, if we approve the school, that's in the rear of the property, and we approve that parking lot by the school, are we also approving the parking lot between the school and the road at this point? Or just the parking lot that goes with the school?
The whole thing.
So the whole thing.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Correct.
The only thing you're giving leeway to the planning director is what the buildings are going to look like.
Okay.
With the offices.
And there may not be buildings there. Right.
Maybe not.
Okay.
But it can't be just a parking lot.
Cannot be?
That's my question.
It would have to be. What are we talking about?
There would have to be two more buildings there, not just a parking lot.
Interesting question. I mean, I think if they came in with a site plan showing just the parking, building the parking lot and not the two office buildings,
that's a
they could probably
change.
They might be able to do it because whatever they do has to conform to the approved concept plan. We can't approve a site plan that doesn't conform to the concept plan. Those parking lots would conform to the approved concept plan, so we might have to approve it.
But we also have to take a look. Do they need that kind of parking? Give justifications?
Unless.
Well, it would have to. At any rate, it would have to be approved by City Council.
No, not really.
No, I mean, once you approve the concept plan, then they just come back with their pieces, which have to conform to that approved concept plan.
Okay, but that lot where the buildings might go doesn't have any parking associated with it, does it?
It does. It just doesn't show up on this drawing.
Yes.
Did you see this handout that they just passed around, Ed, that has the two buildings?
Oh.
Yeah, it's right here.
He gave it to Sarah.
Oh, okay.
Okay, I see it on this drawing. Okay.
Because that looks like it complies with the overlay, would it not? I mean, those two buildings.
The two office buildings might. The cosmetology school does not. It's too far away from it.
But do all three have, assuming the proposed overlay district passes, all three have to comply?
I'm honestly not totally sure about that.
Interesting question.
Still floating out there.
Yeah, okay.
In my opinion, theoretically, all three would have a minimal amount of parking in front. In other words, this cosmetology could have the parking on the back if you wanted it to.
Yeah.
I'm looking at the drawing on 105, and the building is at one location, and the parking is on the side. And am I
on both places?
Right. Yeah.
And that's phase one.
That's true. This is phase two altogether.
Right, okay.
That's what they're reading as to group the pool.
And for council's understanding, phase one is what you're being asked to approve tonight. Phase one, we have all the details for phase one. Phase two, we do not have the details of the building, and that's why they're saying the condition that the planning director under phase two would be able to approve the look of those buildings. But phase one shows you the layout of the parking lot, the detention pond, where the building's going to be at. It's phase two that we have a couple unknowns as to what it's going to look like. But everything under phase one, we have all the details that we need right now.
Does it have to be a planned concept? I mean, can't the developer apply for this cosmetology school, and then if he wants to make it a planned concept, come back to do that?
He could. I mean, council's, my understanding of council's intent and the policy you adopted a year and a half ago was that you wanted planned commercial on the larger tracks on Main Road so that you could deal with the details of a development.
But we aren't getting the details.
Yeah, but this one isn't laid out.
You can ask for more detail. If you're not getting the detail you want, then ask for what you need. And Mr. Lacey can answer these questions better than I can, I think, about his intent and what he really wants to do.
If council has a lot of questions, we'd always ask Mr. Lacey to come to the next meeting and continue it. Or you can pass on first reading and then ask him to come to the second reading.
That would move it on.
And you can ask phase two to come back to you when they're ready to develop phase two and get the details at that point if you wanted to.
No, wait a minute. If we approve it as a concept plan, we can still have control over phase two, right?
I would just reword condition number one and say prior to receiving a building permit for phase two that the developer would come back to council with the
for approval.
With the details for that approval.
Oh, okay.
You could do that if you wanted to.
That wouldn't make me happy.
It would be up to us to approve or not approve.
Correct.
If that's what you'd like to see for phase two.
Yeah. Okay, that sounds reasonable to me. All right, do we have a motion?
Mr. Mayor, I'll make a motion to approve it with the amended change upon first reading.
Can you tell us what that amended change is?
Did you want to say as stated by the city attorney?
As stated by the city attorney.
That's always a good thing.
So condition one will change, and it would have to come back to city council for approval, not the planning director. Okay.
Second the motion, Mr. Mayor.
Okay. Any other comments? Discussion?
I do have a question because I'm really bothered by this building of 12,000 square feet, and we're actually building a set of parking along the one side all the way out to the road, and then still more parking for this school of cosmetology. Do we have any idea of how many parking spaces were actually needed? Is this based on something?
I would think that that a cosmetology school takes up a lot of space because you have little individual teaching stations. I don't know that all of this is going to... I think basically what I'm looking at might be that the parking spaces on the side, on the left of the building, might be used for students, but those parking spaces that are close to the road shown here, I don't know that they would... I don't know that they would need all of that, but maybe. I don't know. Seems like a lot for a cosmetology school.
It does.
Seems strange.
And considering their current location and what they have right now.
Yeah.
Okay.
Now, we should have some numbers, though, to figure out basically how many parking spots there ought to be.
But it is included in phase one, and it might be that they're going to build all those parking spaces in phase one.
I would think that's what it is. Is and when they build this parking lot, they want to do all of it at one time, but the parking that we see off to the right would actually be for the Phase 2 building.
I kind of assumed it was for the Phase 2 building.
That's where we...
The traffic study assumed 4 staff, 50 students, customers of 20 trips a day, and miscellaneous of 15 trips a day. So, you know, 54 people between the staff and students, and you add to that customers and miscellaneous, so I would assume might be UPS or...
And there are really about 60 spaces right next to the building, to the left of the building, and there's...
70 on the front side.
Another 60 or...
70.
70?
Mm-hmm. And then there's some planned up here to where the building square is, that area.
The site plan says 117.
Those are some parking spots, too, it looks
total
like.
Total spaces.
If that comes
for Phase 1 and Phase 2, or for Phase...
Again, we have Mr. Lacey come and see if he can answer some of these questions, if you like.
Okay. Any other discussion? If not, show of hands, please, all in favor. First reading. Opposed? Dick, did you vote in favor or?
I have members.
On first reading?
You say are you for or against?
Did you vote? Yeah, on first reading?
I'll vote forward.
Okay. And we'll have, as Roger said, we'll have Mr. Lacey come next time. Okay. Passes unanimously. Item 2, first reading of an ordinance to convey a lot on Abbeville Avenue to Habitat for Humanity. Mr. LeDuc, please.
Yes, sir. This is an ordinance authorizing the city of Aiken to sell a lot to Habitat for Humanity. We had listed several months ago 3 different lots for them to obtain from us. We were in error on the one that we had on Abbeville. And so we are correcting that through this ordinance. So what you approved on 32309 is now being corrected by conveying the proper piece of property. So for your consideration tonight, this is approval of the conveyance of 731 Abbeville Avenue to Habitat for Humanity. The property number, the proper one is 104-20-09-01.
Okay, sir. Thank you. Do we have a motion and second?
Mr. Mayor, I move for approval.
Second.
Of the conveyance of the lot to Habitat.
Okay. Mm-hmm. Any discussion? Yes, sir. Richard.
Good evening. I'm Richard Church, the Executive Director for Habitat for Humanity in Aiken County. I'd like to put before the council that we are in a position where we need to pull a permit. While not having the deed to do so, you had indeed approved before this particular piece of property. It just had an error in it, in the numbering of the plat. And so I would like to be able to proceed, once this is approved with your first reading, to pull the permit so that we can get started. 2 weeks later, you'll go into your second reading. I'm sure that shouldn't be any problem, but I would like them to be aware this is what we would like to do, so it'd be on record.
Is there a problem with that?
You would be pulling a permit on a property that you don't legally own yet,
which
I don't think
that's
you can do.
Does this require a second reading?
Yes.
Yes.
Oh, okay.
It had the improper language here, and we'll get that corrected.
Yeah.
What I would say is you're taking some risk. We could go ahead and work through the permitting stage so you could start pulling some of those permits so that 2 weeks later, I wouldn't foresee that there'd be a problem on second reading, but...
It's causing us a lot of delay with regard to this first going through this process once again for the property, which had already really, in a sense, has been approved. So whatever we can do, whatever can be done to help us start moving in that direction so we can start some sort of positive actions, particularly with the application of pull and to pull the permit. And perhaps by the time that your second reading goes, we will be able to really start moving on this thing faster.
And we would not, let's say that you turn all your permits in tomorrow morning at 8 o'clock. 2 weeks from tomorrow morning, we could then have everything reviewed, set, so that we could stamp them and give you the permit, assuming council passes on second reading. But we can't approve the permits until it's been totally conveyed to you.
Mm-hmm. Well, whatever is legal and right, of course.
But we could do all that so there's not going to be a delay. You don't have to wait till...
I don't have to. I can go ahead and submit the
process. Submit everything. Instead of submitting on the 23rd of June, you could submit it now, and then on the 23rd of June, we could say it's been approved.
Rather than waiting.
You want to come by at 7:05 on the 22nd. Hopefully, the second reading, we could stamp it then.
Okay. I think that's at least a positive step forward on this, and I would appreciate that, yes. Okay. Thank you.
Thank you, sir. Any other discussion? We have a motion and a second. All in favor? Show hands. Passes unanimously. Okay. Item 3 is approval of auditing firm for fiscal years 2009 through 2012. Mr. LeDuc, please.
Yes, sir. Every few years, we select an auditing firm. We're at the end of the period. We've already extended the individuals that we work with, Elliott Davis. They've done an excellent job. We're not disappointed with them whatsoever, but we feel that we need to go ahead and go through that process and look at who else is out there and what they offer. And to, you know, especially when you're dealing with funds that are public money, you want to make sure that you don't continue to use the same firm over and over and over again, because then some errors and some things could fall through that you don't want to see happen. And so having a review and having a change every once in a while is a good thing. We went through and talked to a number of firms. You have the information here where we got 4 proposals back. The firm that gave us the lowest price, Beard & Company, is a firm that we have worked with in the past, and they have done a good job, represented themselves very well. But some of the software they're now using, their lack of working with other local governments, especially cities in South Carolina, we are concerned about. And so we like to make a recommendation. Normally we would recommend the lowest priced individual, but in this case, considering that we're looking at our fiscal responsibility and our money, we would either recommend our current firm, Elliott Davis, or to go ahead and recommend Cherry Beckett and Holland. The fact that Elliott Davis is doing our work currently is the reason that we're recommending to you tonight that we go with Cherry Beckett and Holland to do this work. When you look at the total amount of dollars on a per year basis, we're talking about less than $10,000 a year, and we feel like having the proper auditing firm who is going to go ahead and check on, whether it be with IT or whether it be with our recreational division or our CDVG, talking to city council, those areas, it's very important to have a firm that's had this experience and has the knowledge to do so. So tonight, after thorough review by Kim Abney and her staff, we would like to recommend your approval of Cherry Becker and Holland to provide auditing service for 4 years, the next 4 years, starting with July 1, 2009. Elliott Davis will finish up this year that we're currently in, and so our next audit report will be done by Elliott Davis, who you've been used to seeing. And then if you choose Cherry Becker and Holland, who did it previous to Elliott Davis, then you'll be seeing them the following year in 2010.
If they work fewer hours than is estimated, then the fees vary?
No, this would be a lump sum fee. Okay. They're just estimating the number of hours based on what they have done in the past. And knowing that, we have frequently gone to most auditing firms and said, we don't think there's a problem. We recognize that we may need to have a special audit done in recreation or CDBG. Now, that's included in the price that's already here, as they would look and audit some of those areas. Or if they talked to one of you as a council member, or last year they wrote you all a letter, if you said, you know, I'm concerned about that city manager and how he manages the money, you know, they'll go ahead and do a special audit of those funds. So that's all included in the fees.
Okay. Couple of questions. Does it have to? Do we have to hire him for 4 years?
No,
is that normal?
We could do it for 3 years. We could do it 5 years. Generally, you do it for a multiple number of years because it takes a year to 2 years just to learn the system, and to especially for a new firm, Cherry Beck and Holland hasn't done for 5 years, so they'll be almost starting from the very beginning with us. Second year becomes a little bit easier for them, and the third year becomes much easier.
Yeah, but I would hope that they're competent to do the first year.
I mean, they do a little bit more of a thorough review because they're...
They're GFOA certified and they're...
Yes.
Okay. Professionally certified. Will this include the Aiken Corporation audit that we need?
Yes. They always... all of our firms do the Aiken Corporation audit.
And will they do a risk analysis with our financial system?
Where's Kim? Yes,
she's saying
will.
Yes.
Okay. And business license, will they, if we don't have a plan, I don't see a plan on what they're going to do, but will that include an analysis, a spot check of business license program?
That's
under
the auditor.
Well,
why don't you come on up here?
No, it's not going to be up to the auditor. It's got to be up to us.
Good evening, I'm Kim Abney. I'll try and answer your questions. The auditors will do the risk assessment of the city. Elliot Davis and Cherry Becker both do the same type of audit in that sense. They will contact council people just like you have been last year, this year. Those are some of the things that have changed a lot in the last few years. And then they decide based on materiality and their assessment of the risk how to audit. Currently, they do look at business licenses. They do what we call a walkthrough, which means they pick a few samples and they go from coming in the door to seeing it on the general ledger. I can't say that that's exactly how everyone would handle it, but that's how it's been handled now.
Okay, so do you have a sense precisely of what they're going to do?
I mean, no, I can't say exactly what they're going to do, but they will definitely do the risk assessment that's required by the standards for auditing standards, statements for auditing standards. They will do the assessment of our internal controls over information technology, which we get from our firm, Elliot Davis, and we would also get that from Cherry Becker.
Okay. And will they will make the presentation to the council of their report?
Oh, of course.
Okay.
Yes.
Will they meet with us if we want to meet with them? Or I'd rather meet with them than get a letter. But
when you say meet individually?
Well, yeah. I mean, last year we got a letter, and I can't imagine just off the top knowing something might be wrong. I mean, if I thought something was wrong, I'd bring it up at a council meeting. So, but there were a couple of charts that I would like to have seen. I'd like to have seen the trend in expenditures and revenues and so forth. I made a comment about that when Elliot Davis made their presentation. I'd like to follow up, and the data should be readily available from previous audits. But I'd just like to get a sense of what they've done and if they've seen problems and so forth.
Typically, that's when they'd be coming for city council.
After it's all done.
Yeah. Right. It's, you know, they don't know what to tell you until they fully go through the audit. You know, one of the reasons we ask them to do the letters, and they do an interview with me for about a half an hour, but it's the same thing, saying, what problems, if any, do you see that you'd like us to look at maybe in more depth or areas that we may not be covering within the audit? And from year to year, I have asked them to go ahead and look into some areas a little bit more extensively just because of the potentiality of some problems. You may have the same thing, you know, after hearing something that let's say it's involving a recreation department, no offense, Glenn, and you may say, you know, have we looked into this more thoroughly? And, you know, when they write you that letter, and then they could come back to you and say yes or no, or you may say, can I see the certain trends or whatever else? And if you want, we could have them come midway through the audit or three-fourths the way or some other, you know, period if you feel like you want to talk to them before they're finished with the audit. Certainly we could ask them to do that.
Dick, I share your concerns. I think if we're paying this kind of money, then we ought to be able to request them to tell us, to discuss with us anything that we want to discuss with them. And know exactly what kinds of things they're looking at. I've got some concerns here about, I don't understand the hours difference from 400 hours to 550 hours. And here we're paying more money for this other company to do this. And I also question why we need to change. If Elliott's doing a great job for us, which I think they are, we've said those words, why change? Now I know theoretically, well, you change, maybe they'll see something that the other firm didn't see, perhaps. But how realistic is that really? Is that really a concern that one firm is missing something that the other is going to pick up? This kind of gets back to what you're talking about, Dick. What are they looking for to start with? Mm-hmm. If they're all looking for the same kinds of things, then I don't know why there would be any mismatch between one company and another doing this, one firm and another doing this.
Well, there's a standard process that they're going to go through, but at the same point in time, it's most in the municipal association will tell you you ought to be changing auditors. That's why I asked about a four-year contract. I was a little surprised with that, but I mean, an auditor ought to be on a year-to-year basis. If you're happy with the job they do, you give them another year, but every 3 or 4 years you need to change auditors. There's a sense of familiarity that the audit personnel will develop with our own staff, and quite frankly, we don't want that in the part of auditors. We want them to come in with a white glove inspection and tell us that things are okay in accordance with the standards of the accounting profession.
But they also have that history of knowing what it was last year and comparing changes, too. I mean, I understand what you're saying, and I don't disagree, but I think you can look at it two different ways.
Sure.
But I just don't understand. Kim, have you got any idea why the hours might be different? The total number of hours?
Mr. Mayor, they really don't know until they come and do the work. I would say that Elliott Davis's is the closest because they've done the work most recently. But it doesn't matter if it takes them 200 hours or 800 hours. The fee that they've quoted us is what we will pay.
The total,
yes.
Mm-hmm. Yes, sir.
Yeah. Well, that's interesting, too, I think.
Well, I would assume Elliott Davis could do it in less hours than a new auditor.
Oh, I would, too.
They've got all the data in their systems and so forth. Yeah.
Just to answer your question on the length of Baird & Company did it for 4 years. Elliott Davis has done it for 5 years now. And Cherry Beckett and Holland, who we did extend their services a couple different times, did it for 7 years. Wow. I mean, there's no each one we start off with a certain set period of time, generally 4 years. If we're happy with them, council's happy with them, then we extend it. But there's no rhyme or reason why it's 3 years, 5 years. We were just trying to get a reasonable period of time. Mr. Mayor, we're very happy with Elliott Davis. They have done an excellent job. We just felt that doing some rotation on this is not a bad thing either. And if you want to do rotation, Cherry Becker and Holland would be the ones. If you're happy with Elliott Davis, we're very happy with Elliott Davis and staying with them for a few more years. If we did stay with Elliott Davis, then I would say that we would probably need to go back to them and not go for 4 more years, but maybe just extend it for 2 more years.
Well, when I went to that budget workshop with the Municipal Association, I think that's where I left with the idea that you ought to be rotating it. This is required by law. If we don't do an audit report, the state doesn't give us certain money. So,
sure.
I mean, it's a...
We need the audit.
Yeah, but I just left. You're a finance professional. What do you think? If it were you, would you change the auditor every so often?
That's what you're...
you know, there are different cities that do different things, and I talked to a lot of different cities when we were doing the bid. Some use the same auditor for years and years and years, and they just feel good about it. And you have ones on the other spectrum that they rotate, even if they think they're doing a fine job. I will say this, I don't know if it matters or not. The audit team will change significantly this year for Elliott Davis. So the people actually coming to look at us will be different. Individual people, the partner and the manager are the same. You met Laurie Smith last year and then Daniel Molnix. But the people who do most of the work will be different.
Is this something that needs a motion, or?
Yes.
Oh yeah, we've got to agree.
Okay.
On something. Yeah.
Well, I'll move that we hire Cherry Beckett and Holland. It should be
for the next 4 years. Or whatever
time
you want to say. We had it for 4 years.
Well, I mean, if we had a performance problem, we could deal with it. Yeah, okay, for the next 4 years.
I mean, obviously, if we felt there was a problem, then we could always, you know, but this would not come back to City Council for 4 years unless we have issues with them.
Second.
Okay, we've got discussion.
Yes. I was looking at the cost. And you have a company that does a good job that's cheaper than the one that you're about to hire. The one that you're about to hire has done it for 7 years, even though it's not been the last 7 years. And could, I don't know if things are really tight, you're talking good fair amount of money here. So I'm just wondering why we're going with the higher of the four versus staying with the one that we have now at a lower rate.
It's a little over $4,000 a year more. Is that?
It starts off at $3,000 a year, and by the fourth year, it's up to about $6,000 difference.
So an average of about $4,000 something I get a year.
And you are correct. That's 10% higher. It just, do we want to have a change, or do you all mind staying with the same firm? We're very, like I said, we're very happy with Elliott Davis. We have checked with other cities, and there are some cities that have used them for 10, 15 years plus. You know, and again, I tend to be probably a little bit more on the cautious side.
Yeah.
And that's why, although I think Elliott Davis is doing an excellent job, I have no problem. Kim has no problem with them. We just felt if we're going to have a firm, we wanted to present this to you and say, Elliott Davis is doing a great job. If you want to recommend them, that's fine. But if you want a change, and we understand why a change is necessary, Cherry Beckett and Holland would be our top firm to change to.
Well, I don't mean to imply any negativism towards Elliott Davis at all. None whatsoever.
Right.
Absolutely none.
Well,
I am just cautious need a change.
It seems to me that 4 years and getting a new group in is not a bad idea at all, frankly. And that's what advocated in most places is you don't stick with the same old firm. Everybody gets too cozy after a certain amount of time.
We had a long discussion on this, didn't we, about, well, when we got Elliott Davis,
because
we had somebody for so many years.
Well, we had him for 7 years.
Right, and then we decided to switch because we thought that was
And we came back to you a couple of years ago because at that time we went to a three-year and we said, can we extend this for 2 more years? And that's why we're at 5 years and this is the end of the five-year period.
For the dues that we pay to the Municipal Association, can we ask them for a point paper on how cities and counties around the state are dealing with it? I mean, it's not that we need to copy anybody, but it would be interesting to know what their recommendations
on how are. Often you would change.
How often, yes. Yeah.
Well, I think we ought to have the proof in the pudding right here as we've changed over the years.
Yeah.
What do we find when we make a change? Do we find that the the incoming audit team says, oh my goodness, look at this. They missed that, or somebody missed that. What kind of experience do we have on the quality? I'm going to support, I'll tell you what I'm going to support, Ellie Davis for 2 more years, at least. They've done a good job. They're lower price, and they've done a good job. Our staff says that. And I don't think there's a whole lot to that coziness thing, because they do change. We've heard that they're going to change people even. So I don't see the evidence or any evidence really that it's necessary for us to change, especially when you've got a lower price here.
And you're changing to the one that's done it for 7 years.
Yeah.
But it doesn't matter to
me
other than the fees.
We get reviewed by a larger organization, and we have won the Achievement Award for our financing. I think there's no question about our books, but again, you have an audit just to check and double check everything that's there. The one thing, if you decide to stay with Elliott Davis, as Kim was mentioning, just about every year, the individuals that come actually physically and do 95% of the audit almost change every year. It's 3 or 4 new people, because it's the lowest staff level individuals just getting out of school that they said. They do all the work. They got lots of questions. They go through lots of paperwork. They spend literally months here. The upper echelon, Lori, who's made the presentation most of the time, has been with them for many, many years. In fact, when we first went to Ellie Davis, as was mentioned earlier, we had some concerns about them, because we wanted to make sure, could they do an audit of a local government in a manner that would befit Aiken. And that's when we found out that Lori, who she's up in Greenwood, we said, well, if you have Lori Smith work on our audits, we have heard from other towns that she does a good job, she's used to working with cities, we will go with you. And that's why we chose Elliott Davis, and we asked that Lori would go ahead and oversee it all, because she had governmental experience. But we're expecting, again, a whole new crew of folks coming in here. If council wants to go ahead and extend it for 2 more years, we'd be just as happy. We'd be happy the other way, too.
Well, we have a motion in a second on the floor here. Is any more discussion before we take a vote? If not, all in favor of going with Cherry Beckett and Holland? Show of hands. 2. Okay. All opposed? Okay. So that is defeated then. So do we have another motion then?
Mr. Mayor, I'd like to move that we stay with Elliott Davis for another 2 years.
Okay, I'll second it. Any discussion?
I could certainly go along with the 2-year extension. I think then that's 6 years. But I do think rotating auditors is a good idea.
I
really do. Mm-hmm. But things are tight now, and maybe 2 more years is 2 more years. It sounds okay.
Mm-hmm. You have a second with that?
Okay. Yeah, I second. Okay. Any other discussion? If not, show of hands, please. All in favor? Okay. Okay. Opposed? Passes 6-1. All right. Item 4, donation and demolition of property at 606 Edgefield Avenue Northwest. Mr. LeDuc, please.
Yes, sir. Dick Perini owns a piece of property at 606 Edgefield Avenue Northwest. It's an old abandoned store that has been in disrepair for really years. I don't want to say decades. As long as I can remember, it's been in disrepair. He'd like to have the building removed, and then in turn he'll donate the property to us. We had something similar to this at the corner of Barnwell in Williamsburg, probably about 6-7 years ago. The only difference is that when we removed the building at Barnwell and Williamsburg, I don't believe we had to go ahead and do an awful lot of asbestos removal. We do have some asbestos removal. I can't tell you exactly what it is, because we know that's in there, but we have not gotten an estimate as to how much it's going to cost to remove it. typically on most of the homes that we've been working with, it costs somewhere between $4,000 and $6,000. This being a store, it may be up to $10,000. What we'll do with the lot, it's a very, very, very small lot. We would probably have to combine it with another lot or just leave it as a vacant lot for a period of time, or you could just keep it a vacant lot for the foreseeable future. So for your consideration tonight, what we're trying to do is get rid of this piece of property. He is willing to have us remove it in return to go ahead and donate it to us for our removal of the property.
Okay. Let me just ask a question here. What's the cost benefit here of this? What do we get rid of a old
building,
right?
Mm-hmm.
The site, for instance. I mean, the looks is improved.
Okay. Let's say we condemn the property. We went through a condemnation recently over. It wasn't Kershaw. What's the next street over behind your church, Leslie?
Sumter
Street, mm-hmm. where was an old
nightclub
that was, the roof was caving in, and it took us 3 years maybe mm-hmm. of going back and forth trying to get it removed. Finally, we wound up removing it. I don't know if they've ever paid us yet for the removal. So then you acquire the property through the tax sale, and so basically you're spending all the money, going through court for 2 or 3 years. It's a lot of aggravation, a lot of time. That's why when we can go ahead and get removal voluntarily, it works out better. Is there a cost benefit? In many instances, it costs us a whole lot more than the property's worth. But you clean up the neighborhood, and you get it done in a quick, expediting manner. Is a basic reason why we're recommending it.
But the lot is big enough, and I admit I didn't see this. I haven't seen
it. It's a
small
lot. Very small. I would say.
Can you have a house on it?
No.
Habitat house or something?
Well, let's look. Under today's standard, it would be very difficult, but there's two lots next to it that have houses on it, on the same size lot. In other words, you know, today a patio home is not something that we can. We are so tied down with our regulations, which is good, that says you have to have certain lot size frontage, side yards, and everything else, that it's very difficult to build on these older lots. But yet, in the 20s and 30s, they built on these older lots that were much smaller. But I'm not saying we're going to build on it. I don't know what we're going to do with a lot at this point in time, other than we had removed a building that people are breaking into. It's a nuisance in the neighborhood.
I have to say this, and I know it's, I mean, I looked at that building today, and it is scary even to look into it. On the other hand, when you're standing farther away, that brick structure, particularly the original brick structure, mm-hmm. there's this, I don't know, I just can't get away from the charm of these small neighborhood groceries that used to yep. be in these neighborhoods.
Mm-hmm. And that's what it was, Jane.
That's exactly what it was. Mm-hmm. And everybody walked there, and it was the center of that few block area. That said, I mean, I don't know if... I haven't looked at it carefully enough to. I can't even remember where the windows are in it, to be honest
They're
with you right now. But it's going to take some work to get it down. Those brick walls are old and look pretty strong to me, especially in the old part.
It's a nice antique type brick.
It really is. And it's right on the road, and they don't have to. I mean, it's there, so right. you don't have to meet the setback requirements. I just wonder if, I don't know, if there's not...
Hey, maybe the two of y'all can buy that and start a little business.
Well, you can. It's not zoned for it anymore either.
Oh, okay.
But the thing is, I don't know. I was thinking out loud.
I think you can take it down, and if you take it down and clear the lot, it would be a nice place to plant.
Just green space.
It could be green space, and you could do community gardens. Yeah.
One of the things we're working with a group here in Aiken, and I haven't gotten back to you because we're still working through the particulars, is starting up some community gardens. Mm-hmm. and we'll probably look at Crawls and Park as one of our first locations. But a citizen called me a few months ago, and we talked about it, and then I got her in touch with some other people and the master gardeners. And so this may be a place to do that at.
And but there's funding for that to start those projects in communities.
I mean, we could, if the property is given to us, we could certainly look at it in other areas. It'd be probably very difficult to make that into a one-bedroom house by converting it, but maybe there is some potential.
Roger, your recommendation is that we do this?
Our recommendation is that we acquire the property and do what is never necessary with the property.
Okay. That's reasonable.
Okay.
I do have to say something, though. I was at Boston Public Gardens, and those are better in the back of stuff. I mean,
they aren't
beautiful. I mean, they really aren't.
Especially when the garden's gone.
My husband's garden isn't pretty either. The flowers are wonderful, but the garden, you wouldn't want on a street corner. I wouldn't.
Okay. Do we have a motion and second on that?
I'd like to move that we we buy the property, that we take the property on and demolish it. That's what it turns out to be, the building that's on it.
Or find some suitable use for it. Maybe somebody would.
Okay. Do we have a second?
Second the motion.
Okay. Any other discussion?
So you're saying that we could accept the donation of this property,
mm-hmm.
and then we'll go ahead and look at it.
Evaluate it.
Much more closely.
Figure out.
Okay. Great.
Okay. Show of hands, please. All in favor? Passes unanimously.
Mr. Mayor, just to call your attention to something, we took that old Bryce's cabinet shop on Hampton Avenue that we were told you just can't do anything with it.
Mm-hmm.
And I loved the front of the building so much, the shape of the
right.
front of the building, that I said we got to figure out a way to keep it, and we did.
Mm-hmm.
And I think it's a beautiful building now.
Okay, under petitions and requests, item one, request for approval of water utilities at on 0.77 acres on Bear Circle. Mr. LeDuc, please.
Yes, there's a piece of property on the north side of the city, actually side of the city, that's requesting water that is currently serving these four trailers out there be subdivided so that actually there's going to be four different taps, one for each of the homes. And as I said, right now it's a master meter, and then they have water going to each one of them, but in turn they want to have separate water for each one. The Planning Commission looked into this, and we do have some regulations for manufactured home parks. And since this is a change in condition going from a master meter to individual meters, the Planning Commission looked at it and said, you know, what can you do with this area other than just the way it is right now? And they came up with several different conditions. One, the condition would be that the annexation agreement be signed, they comply with the tree ordinance and landscaping ordinance, that the water service be approved by the city engineer, and the property comply with any health and safety and separation between the units. Any signage they have out there would comply with our regulations, and that the owner and contract purchaser sign an agreement agreeing to these conditions within 180 days. Under those conditions that I just read, the Planning Commission debated this, talked to the owners of the property out there, and voted 6-1 to deny the request for water and sewer. So this is before you tonight, and they would like to have consideration and approval a request for city water on a 0.77 acre piece of property to serve four units that are currently out there on Bear Circle in Midway Estates.
Okay, thank you, sir.
Is the petitioner present?
I'm sorry.
Is the petitioner present?
Would you like to speak?
My name is Catherine Gerald. I live at 105 Peace Drive in Aiken, South Carolina. The petitioner is actually Fred Martinez. He is the person who I was hoping to buy this piece of property from me. Currently, the way the property is set up now is it's 1.29 acres is what I own, and it has a total of 7 mobile homes on them. Now, my grandmother set this mobile home park up
oh so long ago. I don't even know when she started it up. It's been that long. I actually wanted to keep a small portion of the property with three mobile homes for myself and actually sell the .77 with the four mobile homes to Mr. Martinez. Now, the condition that the trailers are in now, I will admit, are very poor. A lot of the reason for that is that after I took possession of the park and started another business of my own, it came apparent where I was not able to keep up with the standards by making the repairs as they were needed. So I decided to try to sell the property. Saying that much, right now the property is an eyesore to the neighborhood. It's nowhere in comparison to the rest of the neighborhood. The rest of the neighborhood has mobile homes, and almost all of them are mobile homes, but they're newer, or the old ones were brought back up. Other than there is some in the area that are like mine, but Mr. Martinez is prepared to, you know, remodel them and fix them up, and I think that would make it a lot better for our neighborhood. And on top of that, it would bring some more people in to buy your water, because right now they're just sitting there. And if you do not approve this, then most likely they are just going to continue to sit there because I can't afford to do anything with it. And I really don't want to sell my home and everything. I just wanted to sell a small portion, because if I sold the whole thing, then it could stay as is. But since I'm only selling a small portion is the reason why he's having to put in the new meters. And the Planning Commission was asking about the water, the wiring in the mobile homes. I did want to confirm that it does have copper wire in the mobile homes, not aluminum. We did go back and check and confirm that.
Do people live in these four mobile homes right now?
Not right now.
Oh, they're empty. Okay.
Yes, they've been empty for over 2 years now.
Okay. Well, what's a concern to me of just what it says here, that they don't meet the standards, current HUD standards, and then also most of the city standards. I recognize that this has been there for some time now.
Right, and it is in the county and not in the city limits, which is probably the reason why it was set up the way it is back when she started it, because, of course, the regulations and standards are different, and they change over time, a long period of time, actually, it's been. But I do know that Mr. Martinez has, when we went to the Planning Commission, he agreed to all the conditions that you set forward to him. Now, I know that there are certain standards that he cannot comply with, and they talked about them during the Planning Commission, but I do know that he was willing to try to meet all that he possibly could. And I would really like to see this property be able to be, you know, remodeled and look a little bit better than what it is, because quite honestly, if I hold on to it, it's just going to sit there, because I can't do anything with it. I have my own another business that I have to worry about and keep and maintain.
Mm-hmm. Well, on the positive side, the having to abide by the city conditions here that are laid out will improve it a little bit.
Yes. Yes.
With trees and tree ordinance and those kinds of things.
Yes.
That's on the positive. Would any of these conditions help it to come any closer to meeting city standards or HUD standards?
Not on the structures themselves. The standards we have are more the separation between units and landscaping, some roads, and standards of those types. If you're concerned about the buildings themselves, number one, they're not inside the city, and number two, again, we have not gone inside and inspected them, but we don't believe that they would meet the current HUD standards for a mobile home as you what you'd have today.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. The Aiken County inspector came out and inspected the mobile homes and gave us a list of things that we would have to fix before they would be allowed to have electricity cut on in them. And I have these here if you want to see them.
And that's where we cannot control it.
Right.
You know, because it's not inside the city limits.
Right. Well, this is kind of a toughie. Anyone else have any questions?
I'm just wondering, you know, based on what we have in the documentation in terms of what it, the standard that does not meet HUD and our requirement, my other thing thought is how can we help you, and I'm, that's what I'm sitting here wrestling with. What can we do to help you and advise you with?
Do you have water out there now?
Yes, ma'am, I do.
But it's just one meter, and you're trying to get in an individual meter?
Right, because I'm actually keeping a small portion and selling another portion, he would have to have his own water meters. And with the new standards, they say that you can't just put one meter on four mobile homes. They're requiring him to have four individual meters. Where mine was grandfathered in, he's actually having to go through the new process of getting the meters.
Again, there's seven units out there. Mm-hmm. She's going to sell off one portion. Those four are going to have their own separate meter. She'd keep the master meter for your three.
Right, correct.
Mm-hmm. Now, if it would be any help, I guess we could ask Mr. Martinez to come and talk to us since he's going to be buying it.
Right. Mr. Martinez, he was intending on being here tonight, but evidently he's a chiropractor and had to go to a commission or something to keep his license. He was supposed to send his attorney here, but I do not know if she is here or not.
Who? What's he going to send?
He was supposed to send his attorney to represent him, but I do not know if she's here or not tonight.
I don't think so. Doesn't look like it.
Are you looking at what we have here?
Yes.
Could you go over with me in the picture that's labeled site underneath the drawing of the neighborhood?
Okay.
I think it's, I can't see the page number, but there's a mobile, you see the black line?
Yes.
Okay. There's a mobile home outside the perimeter of the black line. Is that one of the six that you're talking about?
To the right of the black line, where it looks like the line's almost directly on the side of the mobile home, that's one of the mobile homes that I'm going to be keeping.
Okay.
If the council approves the water for us, we're going to have the land surveyed and then that line moved to make sure that it's not right up on top of that.
Okay. And then the other one is the one perpendicular to that one? Going from east to west.
Okay. The other line looks like it's somebody in somebody's driveway. As far as I know, the line is actually supposed to be on located on the fence that is right on the inside of that line.
Okay. I rode out there and I looked around and I was trying to find the four that you would determine to be habitable. And there's a little square building in the back of the property.
Mm-hmm.
Is that one of the units you're going to have someone living in?
No, that is actually a shed or a storage unit. That would never be used as a living area at all. There's four mobile homes and one shed.
Okay. All right. I think if you want to do this, maybe it's a good idea to go ahead and get with the county and have them bring it up to code and then come back. Well, I don't know. You probably could get the votes tonight, but maybe come back after you have developed the land and then have it separated after you get it going. Right now, I don't feel like I could allow anybody I know to inhabit a home that is deemed to not meet HUD standard. I guess if they had been living in it all along, and I know there are some homes like that, that and that's all they could do, then that would be all right. But you're asking us to put someone in a home now that we know already it's not.
Oh no. I'm not asking you to say that somebody would actually live there. And no, in my opinion, none of those four trailers are livable at this time. But Mr. Martinez will not buy the property from me if he cannot have water. And that is one of the things that has held us up. As far as I know, Mr. Martinez is not going to be prepared to do any developing or anything like that unless he is actually going to be, you know, guaranteed that he can have water. I personally cannot answer that for him, okay. Of course, but in my opinion, I do agree with you. None of these mobile homes are livable right now, but I do know that Mr. Martinez intends on making them up to standards and in a livable condition before he ever rents them.
One of the things, if council is concerned about the condition of the homes, that you might want to consider is that you could approve serving them with water, but we would not install water meters until the county gives it a CO stating that the buildings meet codes and are up to standards. I mean, if that's your major concern. I mean, obviously, they would still have to meet the other conditions that we have, but if the concern is the homes and they're not in the best of shape, and that's, I'm being very kind when I say that.
No, I know.
that really is going to have to be a county issue, and their inspectors, as before, that an electrical meter would be installed and that we would go ahead and put a water meter out there.
If it met the distance requirements, would they not be able to be where they are? Would there be fewer mobile homes? Or
on 0.77 acres, you could certainly separate them
far
enough away. It's really the condition of the homes, and some of them were, and I haven't been in them, so I don't know, but they might have to be totally gutted to meet certain standards the county has, or some major renovations that have to be done before they could be occupied. But again, that's a safe housing issue that the county would have to go ahead and deal with. And we would have nothing to do with that because it's not in our jurisdictional limits. But again, if you wanted to give water, we could say no water until those other things are met.
Or reject it, and when they're in compliance, come back.
Yeah. If we were to reject it, though, then the purchaser would not purchase his property. If we were to put the stipulation on there that we would allow water once the houses came up to the county code, we would not put meters in until that time, then he knows that he will have water as soon as he meets that obligation.
Is it your sense he'd close the deal on that?
Yes. I do agree with that, and I think that Mr. Martinez would as well.
I tell you, I'd like to talk to Mr. Martinez.
Yeah.
I mean, if everything's falling back on Mr. Martinez here, and I understand your plight, but still, he's the one that would be doing something.
Oh, I know, because
I'd like to hear him
say
that he would do these kind of things.
Okay.
Could we see that list of county requirements? I mean, I'd just be curious. Because to me, it looks like it would cost more to fix them up than it would just
move them out of here. Just get rid of them and start over.
And then start over. I mean, I can't imagine that that's going to be cheap if he really is going to fix them up.
But just remember, there's no... Is there city sewer out there?
No. They all have their own septic tanks.
They've got septic tanks, so they're going to probably go where they
are now. Yeah. Well, I just didn't know if that meant any kind of... If that was part of the problem, too. The location of them on the lot. I don't know.
I would think so.
Well, they were in use up until 2 years ago, so that's whether...
I agree with... I mean, I have to say that I think it would be wonderful for Horseshoe Bend if those were fixed up, because, as you said, most of the other homes around there are not in that deplorable state.
Mm-hmm. Right.
And this only takes care of four of them. There's still three others.
I do apologize, Mr. Mayor. I do not have that information like I thought I did. But a lot of the main concerns that the inspector had was with the external electrical boxes, some of the covers for the breakers were missing, that they would have to be replaced. One of them had rust on it, so the whole box would have to be replaced. And, of course, he also noted that all of them had to meet safety housing regulations. I can't remember what exactly he called it right now. But I can't find that piece of paper. I do apologize.
Well, that's okay. That's
all right. And, again, if council wants to continue this, we can certainly continue.
Does council want to continue it?
I think we should hear from Mr. Martinez.
We got to have some assurances.
Yeah, I agree.
I agree.
Move to table?
Yeah. Do you understand what we're saying? We'll table it. We'll just set it aside until the next meeting.
Until the next meeting?
Mr. Martinez can come.
Okay.
And that's 2 weeks from today, June 22nd.
Okay.
I mean, we may end up not approving this anyway. We may.
Yes,
but
I do understand
to give it
that.
A fair shot, I think we ought to talk to Mr. Martinez, and then, you know, maybe that would
give us some
difference, you know, okay. Give us some more information
right.
That we could count on.
We need a motion.
Okay, yes, we do. We need a motion and a second.
I made a motion to table.
Second.
Okay. All in favor of continuing this? Okay, passes unanimously. Thank you, Catherine. Will we be in touch with Mr. Martinez?
If Mr. Martinez is not going to come, let us know, and then we could always put it onto a different agenda date.
I will.
Okay, thank you.
Okay, thank you very much. Item 2, resolution to accept the water line easement at the Dollar Store located near I-20 and U.S. Highway 1 from West Shore LTD. Mr. Lizard.
Yes, sir. When the Dollar Store was built off of Highway 1, we originally thought that a water line would go from U.S. Highway 1 directly to the Dollar Store, only to find they found out that that line was abandoned a long time ago. So the closest water line to get to easily was off the frontage road. We ran a line to their location. They, in turn, now that the line is in place, are deeding us the easement for this line to be on, because right now the line's on private property. And for us to do any maintenance in the future, we need to have the proper easements go along with the water line that we have installed. This water line will be used for other property in and around that area, so we will be adding more taps to it in the future, and therefore, again, the necessity to get it. So for your consideration tonight, this is approval of resolution accepting deed of dedication and easements for a 15-foot waterline easement from West Shore LTD located off West Frontage Road and west of Highway 1 near I-20.
Okay. Thank you, sir. Do we have a motion? Second?
So moved.
Second, Mr. Mayor.
Okay. Any discussion? If not, show of hands. All in favor? Okay. Passes. Yes. Item 3, Parks, Recreation, and Tourism Security Recommendations. Mr. Ledoux, please.
Yes, this is the one we've all been waiting for.
Yes.
Unfortunately, we had a situation where, for the first time ever, an individual was shot at the Week Center. And we cannot recall where we had something like this in any of our parks before. It gives us pause to consider that it could have been a whole lot worse, but we certainly don't want to have that happen again. And more importantly, we want individuals to feel safe when they come to our parks and recreational facilities. Now, saying all that, we can't ever prevent 100% things happening. But we feel we could go ahead and go a long way to help avoid potential problems happening in the future. Staff sat down, primarily Pete and Glenn and myself, to talk about this issue. And we threw around a lot of ideas, checked with other cities, and we are making 4 recommendations to you tonight that if you feel comfortable, I would certainly appreciate a vote on it. If you want to discuss it further and think about it, we could always hold that off till the next meeting. The four recommendations that we are recommending tonight are listed, and they're in order of priority in our opinion. The first one we've had a lot of discussion on, that's the card system. The card system would be used at Odell Weeks, eventually would be used at Smith Hazel, and if we have any other recreational facilities, those also. I did talk to North Augusta. I talked to their former city manager, Charles Martin, and he was the one that was involved when they first installed that at their recreational site probably about 15 years ago. And it's worked very well. He said that when they do have events, organized basketball going on, and the grandparents come or the parents come or brothers and sisters, you know, they allow them in, and you know, they just have to be very liberal in those areas. But other times, they do require individuals for free play or using the facility. City residents get it free, and then others pay a fee based on whether it's a day use or a family use or if it's just an individual usage. We could go ahead and install that almost immediately, although we would not fully implement it probably for several more months. When I say immediately, we could start setting up the card system, get it where everybody goes through the existing doors to the station. They'd have to show their card, swipe it through. We'd create all the other doors as exit doors. What it will do for us is we will know who's in there. It probably will mean that some people may decide not to go in there anymore because they don't want to, unfortunately, have everybody know who's in there. You know, and there's probably the type of individuals we don't want to have in the facility. Right now, we have some people that are on trespass notice because of incidents that have happened in the past. They can get into the building very easily. Even though we're saying they can't go in the building, they go into a side door, the other doors, and go inside, and we would never know. And so from that incident we had the other day, we have four people on trespass notice, and we like to say that they're not in that building, but we don't know. So it would, that will help us with identification. It'll solve a lot of the problems we feel. It's not foolproof, though. Item number two is that we are requesting adding two additional individuals. And you know how reticent I am in saying we need more people. Glenn will testify to that. But in this case, having individuals at Odell Weeks, Virginia Acres, Smith Hazel, wearing a uniform and being visible during the evening hours and on weekends. We're not talking 8 to 5. We have a lot of people, staff individuals with maintenance, other individuals at those two facilities. And we don't feel we have a problem from 8 or early in the morning till 5 o'clock. It's after 5 o'clock till 9 and on weekends that we seem to get a little bit more free play, and there seems to be more questions as to what's going on, and there's not as many eyes and ears there at the building. So in talking to public safety, a few weeks ago I went down to Mount Pleasant and talked to their police chief, and they have instituted a system called community service officers. A community service officer gets several weeks of training. They get a uniform. They know the basics. They still go through all the background checks to the personality profiling and psychological exams. They could be a police officer, but at this point in time in their life, they're not, either because they're retired, semi-retired, or maybe still in school in some fashion, and they'd be working nights and weekends. We'd have two of them each working 20 hours a week. We'd shift them so that maybe week one, person A works Monday through Friday, and person B works Saturday and Sunday, but we'd work that out. They would float between the different facilities so that at any one moment, you'd probably, let's say, a given evening from 5 to 9, they'll spend 3 hours or so at Virginia Acres, Odell Weeks, and 1 hour at Smith Hazel. Now, to tell you, Smith Hazel, we really don't have problems. Betty Giles and the staff, because that one person, where their desk is located, they could be looking into the gym, they could look around the corner, they could see everything that's there. So we really don't have a lot of problems, but we do have some grounds there where they got the track, you got some tennis courts. I think an individual like this going up there and being visible in and around Smith Hazel and walking through the building a few times a night would be very useful. Same thing, if we have tournaments, they would probably go to Citizen Park and spend a few hours touring around and walking around. If we needed someone to investigate accidents or do some other things, the CSO is what Mount Pleasant uses to do non-ticketing and investigations of a criminal nature for Mount Pleasant. And so they are using them in a number of different areas, and then they use those individuals as a measure of, in many cases, that may be the next person we hire on full time. And so they're great in a number of ways, and we think they'll pay for themselves, and we estimate that'll cost around $25,000 a year. Again, if you looked at 40 hours a week, 12 hours, $12 an hour, that's about $25,000 if you had a full-time, but we separate and have two part-time individuals because of the nature of nights and weekends. The third area we're looking at is security cameras. Even though we have 27 security cameras currently at Odell Weeks inside the building, they were put in enough time ago, just like most electronic products, about every 3 years they become obsolete. These cameras were pretty much the state of the art several years ago, but we found out, unfortunately, that they don't zoom in. They're not wide-angle lenses. If we had wide-angle lenses or cameras that rotated back and forth, we could probably get by with half that number of cameras. But all those photos that come off those cameras go to a desk right now where we have a facility assistant or someone there every hour that the center is open. But we want to go with cameras in more strategic locations and modernize those cameras. That's why we're suggesting we get a consultant to come in. We might be able to take those cameras, retrofit the lenses on it, or do some other things that we could still use them, or we may have to go out and buy them. And we buy them depending on what resolution and what they could do, how well they could zoom in. We priced them out at anywhere from $1,000 to $2,000 each. And so that's where I'm estimating we could go ahead and outfit Week Center and put some in strategic locations outside for about $50,000. And then we'll be looking in the future. Smith Hazel, we don't have any cameras right now. Citizens Park, there's no cameras. Somewhere in the future, and I hate to say it, but we're getting to our society where we may have cameras go on Main Street. Main Street being Lawrence or Richland or other locations. But right now, we're going to start with Odell Weeks and take it from there. Last of all, we feel a call box system. There are a number of locations along the track, tennis court, basketball area. I know that Dick Smith called me one time. Someone from the tennis center was very concerned about their security. And I think if there was a call box there, they would have felt a lot better as they walked back the car. Councilwoman Price said that when she walks on the track sometimes either late at night or early in the morning and she gets by the shelter by the former playhouse, you could have someone sitting at the playhouse or sitting in that shelter there and there's no one around. I mean, you're along Whiskey Road, it's not a problem. You've got lots of cars, activities, but in the back area. And so we feel some call boxes, again, would be security and would really help out. And plus, they'd be there for medical emergencies. If somebody had some problems at the tennis court or skate park or something else and they didn't have a phone, there'd be a call box. And again, going back to public safety. Three of the four items are one time only: the cameras, the card system, and the call boxes. We have enough funds set aside that we could go ahead and purchase those without really a problem. And so I wouldn't want us to get concerned because of the money on that aspect, especially in light of the situation we just had ourselves involved in. $25,000 a year for the two people, I think will pay for itself over a long period of time. And so what we're recommending to you all tonight is that we take these four items. If you feel that one or more of them needs some more work, we can. As I said, the card system, we had implemented over a several-month period of time because, just say, each of you living in the city, spouses, children, they're all going to have to get a card. eventually to get in. And so making up all those cards and getting it activated and getting up and running is going to take a little bit of time. Getting the word out to everybody concerning that. But again, we could almost start that immediately because we have the device, we have the plans for it, we had money in this year's budget to start the renovation. We still have that money available to do that work. So that's not a hard problem. And so we're coming to you tonight recommending that we go forward with the four recommended security measures at our facility at Odell Weeks and then look at other facilities in the future.
The card system is the one that we're using now, is it not? Different than the one I used to go to the gym?
No, that's correct.
Yeah, same one.
But we're not using it for everybody right now.
Yeah, but that's going to be the system you'll give up. Okay. The call boxes, if you pick them up, you would be direct contact?
Dispatch.
Okay, so they go directly into dispatch.
Public safety.
So it would be you could explain why you're calling and so forth. Okay. And would the camera cover the entire parking lot, which I understand is not covered now at Odell Weeks?
That's our intent. Again, whether we get a camera that rotates or one, we get several of them, so they're fixing a spot. We're probably talking more rotating cameras than not. But again, it's going to have to be something that could zoom in, something that has a little wider angle lenses. And that's part of where we'd get the security firm to help us with
those security
decisions.
Consultant can lay that out for you. That's a good report, but super job.
Roger. You know, the call box system really works where they have them in place, especially on university campuses.
Yes.
I mean, I have firsthand knowledge of that, and I think that's a great idea. But number two, we're hiring people that look like police officers, dressed like them.
They would not be carrying any kind of a weapon. They would probably have maybe some pepper spray with them or some kind of some device in case they got threatened. They would have to go through a certain amount of training with Pete. And again, like I stated, their background check and everything else would be just like any other public safety officer.
Okay. What kind of liability would we face? I mean, does Mount Pleasant face any type of liability with the...
In talk to the chief, they haven't had any problems. They've had this in existence for a number of years. I mean, you could call these people park rangers, which, I mean, park rangers don't go through a lot of major police-type training. They do a lot of interpretation, answers questions, give out information. And we thought about, do we call these park rangers? Do we call them community service officers? What title give them? The title really doesn't matter as much as just providing a presence out there. Len has people that we could do the same thing with his, but we thought in more of a police type of a uniform, people would feel a lot more secure, and with some additional training from public safety, with a radio on them that they could call up a unit that'll get there within a minute or two, would be the best way to go forward. Also, let's say they go to the basketball court area and some of the individuals that are playing there are using language that would not be appropriate for the area, or they're getting a little bit more physical than you'd like to. A person in uniform probably could go ahead and get a lot more respect than a non-uniform person. But they're going to have to be sensitive. They're going to have to go through some training. How do you do that in a respectful way that you're going to go ahead and get the end results that you want?
But they also have a radio where they could communicate matter where they are.
Yes, they would have a radio that they could communicate directly back to public safety with the dispatch office.
I have two questions, Roger. The exit doors, you say we'd have one entrance in and the rest would be exit doors.
Correct.
How do we stop someone from going out the door and someone coming in as the door is open and going out the door?
I believe we figured out there was like 10 or 11 areas where there are doors now, and there would be a camera on each one of them. There would be an alarm system on each door so that if you open that door up, the alarm would go off. Okay. The person could see on the camera who's coming in or not coming in. And obviously, with the card system, we'd know right away who's there, who's not there. We'll get it on camera, and then they wouldn't be allowed back in the area for a certain period of time.
Okay, well, that's good. Question on the call box. If someone was intent on hurting somebody and waiting in the shadows, so to speak, and they go to that call box closest to it and they cut the line, would public safety know that this line is no longer in service? Or could it be set up such that they would know that something happened to this?
I would think
phone?
That if a system got disabled, there's ways that it's similar with Larry Morris. If we had a lift station that is not functioning properly, a light goes off, a radio signal goes out. I don't know the technology, but I would think there would be a way of doing that if one became disabled. Here's our expert. I know that the university has call boxes now. Aiken Tech went to them recently. So they have them now in the parking lots.
A little bird told me you were going to ask that question there. So I called the company today, actually, and asked them that exact question. And they say normally they don't have that problem with their boxes. Now, this is the company rep telling me this. He said they're very secure boxes. There's only one button. The way they're set up, designed the way USC Aiken bought them, if somebody took a bat to one, then it's set up on a phone system, so you would disable the phone system. It couldn't call. What he did talk about was we may could add some separate wiring to those, and I don't know the technology to do that, but we could wire something to that, so if it does become disabled, we would get an alarm, just like an alarm in a building going off.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah.
So we would know that. And he also strongly suggested that our folks or the CSOs or whatever manually check these things every day.
Yeah.
Sure did.
Well, that's good. Because that, you know, that's maybe a far out thing, but it could happen if somebody really wanted to get somebody or hurt somebody or whatever, you know. That would be good to have some kind of alarm system, I guess.
Glenn, could I ask you something else? I haven't been out there for a while. A lot of people use the bathrooms in the Odell Weeks Center when they're out in the park with kids and themselves and picnics and all that stuff. Is there another bathroom facility now, or are those ones in the back still about the only ones out there?
The ones in the back are the only ones there.
So they have to come around to the front, use their entrance thing?
No. If the building's open, there's two sets. If the building's open, there's a set sort of in the new wing where the aerobics are,
okay,
and the old set back in the far corner. Now, one of the recommendations in here for the overall plan is to make those original set of bathrooms,
uh-huh,
we will actually build a wall, secure the building, and those restrooms would be open 24/7 for people who are walking the track early in the morning or something like that. And we'd like that, obviously, so people could come in and out.
Thanks.
One of the things that... nothing's 100% foolproof. Mm-hmm. And like the call boxes, all we could do is try to get some kind of alarm on it or signal. But the most important thing is they'll just have to be checked every day. And that's going to be probably the best way. Hopefully that's not going to happen. But again, it's like you said, it certainly can happen. But we're trying to come up with as many measures as possible that we think will help prevent another incident happening again.
Okay. Any other discussion?
If council feels good about this, instead of me putting this on the agenda for the next meeting, asking that you approve these four items, I would appreciate a motion authorizing the city manager to start implementing these four items immediately.
So moved.
Second.
Okay. Show of hands. All in favor?
Okay. Thank you very much.
Anything else you want? Okay.
No. Well,
let's see.
Bring it off.
We added on item 4 and 5, the letter to Neil from Neil, excuse me, was the first one we added.
I just wanted to bring this up. We spent months working on changing the zoning of that property. Neil put in his letter that he had sent me a letter on April 6th asking that the back 30 feet would not be included in that, and he's given that as the reason why. Well, as I told Neil at that, when he sent me that letter, this was a couple of days before first reading, and every time there's a change and there's another condition. You know, let's stick with the original motion, you know, and let's try to get this through before we start making more changes. So, you know, I don't want to speak for Neil, but I think all along there was like, well, I could do one or the other. And unfortunately, he's writing back now, and I'm not absolutely sure that's still going to go through the way his letter is presented. But I did want to make you aware that according to the letter, so that I could get this on tape, and so we could kind of finalize this issue, is that we did approve the property as general business if and only if he donated the property to us. According to his letter, he is not intending donating the property to us. He still has 120 days, but his intention is to go ahead and sell that property and allow it to be developed with patio homes, or really they could put whatever they want to back there, which in that case, that means that front piece of property has to remain RML. And he could have done this at any time. It's just after going through that effort, I just want you all to be aware of that and to make that public.
He also, I ran into Mr. Blocker at the Chinese restaurant, who you know was not a fan of my opinion at the meeting, but he was just wonderful the other day. And he said, "You look familiar." And I said, "Oh, yeah, I know I do." And anyway, his agreements have not been kept either. He is really out a considerable amount of money over this, which is sad. It really is, and I don't know what we can do.
There's nothing you can do. I just wanted to bring that to your attention. I know it's in the issues, but it's a sad thing, and I just want you to be aware of it.
The other item here, I wrote down Steve.
Steve Mueller is not here, and so there's really not a lot of reason to go forward with this. But he wanted to make some changes to, if you recall, in 2007 he came to you, requested a number of changes for the bed and breakfast that he has. He then wanted more changes. He went to BZA last August, then last November. BZA turned him down. He talked to Councilman Waters earlier today. She suggested he send me an email. He did. He wants several changes to the facility, which were not approved by the BZA. And he wanted to know if he could get them all approved tonight or as soon as possible. Well, it's about a 3 to 4 month process because you have to change the zoning ordinance, which means that, number one, if you said, let's make this number one on the agenda and we give it to Ed and they talk about it, then they might have a public hearing in August and has to come back to you for two readings. It's not going to be a quick process. But he's not here tonight to represent himself. But let me just tell you what he is asking for. He wanted to have concerts every other week because there's sometimes three Fridays in a month, and right now we say twice a month, which is a pretty simple request. Still would have to have a change in the ordinance, though. He'd like to have amplified music till 10:30. That's the one that they were most adamant about and turned it down and said, no, stay with 10 o'clock. And third thing he wanted, which he wanted to have right away, was he wanted to be able to start serving breakfast at 7:30 in the morning. When he asked us in 2007, he said 10 o'clock in the morning. But he said Sugar Magnolia is going to be closing down, and therefore he wanted to know, could he open this up right away so he could get that crowd over there? He indicated he might be here tonight and added it to the agenda. So I'm just telling you, I'll let him know that I mentioned it. If he wants to come to a future meeting, he certainly is entitled to do so.
Okay. He knows the schedule, though, that it would normally take, or does he?
Yes and no. Yes and no. He knows what the schedule is. He doesn't want to hear what the schedule is.
Right. Okay.
Yeah, the BZA, when they heard him, they kept hearing him and hearing him and hearing him, and they were finally realizing that we'd passed an ordinance, and he kept going for exceptions, and they got frustrated and said,
yes.
No, go get the ordinance changed, because essentially that's what you're asking us to do, and that's a council decision, not ours. So
So, you know, some of the questions he has are not that bad, but again, it's going to have to go through a long process if he wants to get approved. The disappointing thing is BZA acted on this last November, and if he wanted to have those changes, he had 6 months, 7 months, except for that 7:30 in the morning, which he just came up with.
Yeah, that just happened, and that's never been considered by BZA.
7:30 a.m. shouldn't give us any problem.
I don't see any problem with that at all.
Yeah.
He just has to go through the process. Isn't that what you're saying?
Right, and every other Friday is really not a...
No.
I mean, we have no problem with that ourselves because we already said twice a month. It just, he wants it to be every 13 days, not twice a month. So that way, if you had three Fridays in a month, you could...
Yeah.
And so again, but it's going to take 3 to 4 months to get that through. If you say that's going to be the number one issue with the Planning Commission.
Well, I'd like you to make it clear, though, that a lot of us don't think the 7:30 would be a problem. I mean, we're not promising anything now. But, I mean, all that I keep remembering is how much that block means to that community. It really does. I mean, if that block goes downhill, it's really going to be a detriment to that community.
He's done a lot of work, and he's invested a lot. And
he really has worked hard, and I mean, and so with what, all he needs to do is just go through the process, and I think...
Have there been any complaints about the music?
No, and I don't see any problem with 10:30.
There's a couple of people that, when he went to BZA originally, said 11, then he went down to 10:30, and there were a few people, but the people that objected were not really in the area.
They weren't even in the area.
Right.
That's
and the great thing about him is that he's formed great alliances with the people in the neighborhood.
That's right.
They know him. He invites them over to events. Yeah. So they're part of the
So if he'd like to go forward these changes, I'll invite him to the next meeting and we'll put that formally on the agenda. So that's all. I didn't know if he'd be here or not.
I think it's great that you brought it up. Thank you.
Let's be adjourned. What do you say?
Yeah.
All right. Thank you, Gary.
Don't rush out, Gary.
Good night, all.
Good night.